Good evening, everyone. Welcome to today's regular City Council meeting. It's Tuesday, February 11th. We're at the Veterans Memorial Hall. And for the record, let it be known that all council members are quite present and we have a quorum. And at this time, if you'd please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. If you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, everyone. At this time, we have a closed session report. Ms. Russell?
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. For Mayor, Council, and Mayor, Council Member reports and announcements, I'd like to start off by thanking Ms. Slayton. Don't see her here at the moment, but Ms. Slayton has been our acting city manager, and I just wanted to extend a thanks out to her for her work and dedication. We do have a interim city manager, Mr. Ed Crines, who has actually started, but he will officially start with us next week. Just wanted to make that announcement. He comes with interesting background from police chief to city manager in various municipalities, so just wanted to welcome him. He'll be at our next council meeting. Wanted to make a shout out for we presented a city bike map, and that was presented by Mr. Red Davis from our bike committee at the SLOCOG meeting. Everybody on the board was very receptive to that, and as it so happens that the city of Morro Bay is the first city to have a city bike map. So, you know, something to be proud of. They did a good job, so I wanted to put a shout out to our bike committee and that. And with that, I'll look to my left for announcements. George? Christine?
Yes, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have one announcement this evening, and it comes from my service on the United Way Board of SLO County. And today is February 11th, and they're celebrating 2-1-1 Day, second month, the 11th day. And that's to promote a wonderful resource that I'm not sure everyone's aware of, so I wanted to make you aware of it this evening. It's called 2-1-1 SLO County, and it's a phone number that you dial, and it's a non-emergency number, so it's not like 911, but if you dial 211, it's a 24 hours a day, 7 day a week, you will get a live person, and you will have free confidential, and if you need it, bilingual assistance for access to health and human services resources. So many of these resources are low or no cost, and it's a way to, when you find yourself struggling with an issue in your personal life or someone in your family or a neighbor, you can just dial 211 any time of the day or night and be guided toward resources locally here in SLO County. And there's a 30-second PSA that will tell you more eloquently than I about the service. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for calling 211. How can I help you?
I need help with our electric bill.
I'm having some health issues right now, and I need to see someone.
My house payment's so high that I have no money for food.
I'm going to see if I can find some resources in your area.
211 gathers the most relevant health and social services information available and delivers confidential guidance for free over the phone, web, email, and text. Dial 211 toll-free or visit 211.org for more information. Major funding provided by the United Way.
Okay, thank you very much. You can look for that on your cable channel as well. So I'd also want to say that not only does United Way fund this resource, but they did lose some funding a while ago, and about 2 years ago the county has stepped up and made a great commitment to funding 211 as well. So please pass the word. If you're looking for information for you, a friend or neighbor, dial 211 SLO County. And also I should say you can go online too. They have an extensive resource of their digitally also of health and human services resources for you. So 211. Happy 211 Day. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Nancy?
Actually, I have three quick ones. The Central Coast Veterans Support Group is changing their meeting day for at least this month. They will meet tomorrow, Wednesday the 12th, at 10 o'clock in the morning at Dorn's Restaurant on Market Street. And they will provide coffee and muffins, so please come prepared to that meeting, ready to share ideas about how we can better serve our local veterans. They're having a little problem getting people involved, so they're really trying a new approach here and a new time. The next one is a little more personal. Since the Bay News has yet to print my press release, I'd like to read to you what it will say when it comes out. Morro Bay Councilwoman Nancy Johnson is holding office hours at the Chamber of Commerce on the corner of Harbor Street and Piney Way at 10 a.m. Monday. Constituents are invited to stop by and share any of their concerns. And I'm also especially interested in having local business owners encouraged to stop by, except next Monday, because that's a real holiday. My grandsons will turn 14 years old, so I won't be here. I'm also available at 772-3738 if you have any questions at all. And my last announcement is really very exciting. It's from the Morro Bay 50th Community Committee. We have our most recent budget available after our first dinner, which was extremely successful. After the dinner, we had $20,000 in the budget, $15,000 of which is the city funding that has not been used and may not even be used at all. We're using the $5,000 to do some of the following projects which were approved at our meeting. $2,500 was our first payment to the women in fisheries for their statue, Those Who Wait. We discussed a banner to go in City Park, and we talked about some other banners, but for $275, we are funding a 12-by-4-foot banner to be displayed intermittently. Did a few other things, including allocating space for a 1964 vehicles at the car show, which will be the first in May. We're working with the car show committee, and we will be funding up to $500 for 3 trophies. We're also participating in the emergency vehicle show with a children's coloring book. We have ordered 50th anniversary commemorative lapel pins for city staff and for council and sponsors, and then there will be some for sale. And I didn't write down the cost of that, but I have it available. We also had a wonderful discussion with Red Davis and Joe Woods about 2 bicycle activities. One will be a tour of city parks on bicycles. Another will be a tour of historic sites in Morro Bay, which really goes back to our 50th. And Mr. Woods is talking about maybe securing the trolley for people who don't ride bikes to go along on those 2. And that was funded. We had a discussion of tree planting, and we'll be talking with Guerrilla Gardeners further to see what their needs are in terms of cash. We have up to $400 allocated to plant dahlias in the planters, the Morro Bay Beautiful planters, all the way down Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. And I've also talked to some business owners who are interested in their planters having dahlias in them, so that those will bloom this summer and early fall. And you know, of course, by now that the dahlia has been the city flower for 50 years, so that's very appropriate. We talked about the community picnic and parade, and another date on Thursday, July 17th, which, if you look up here, is our actual incorporation date. On that day, we will be having an ice cream social, honoring our staff, but inviting the entire community. So we'll have community and staff having an ice cream social during the lunchtime. In September 6th, in conjunction with Dahlia Days, we will be doing the parade and a picnic and probably, hopefully, a Dahlia Queen to go in the parade. So we will be discussing that budget at our March meeting. So we've been very busy. We have a lot of things that have been funded, other things that will be funded. So far, we've found that the activities we've done have given us a really good resource in terms of money to use, which helps. So, as I say, $5,000 was the profit from our fundraising dinner. So if you want further information or a copy of the budget, you can contact me. And once again, my phone number is 772-3738. Also, if you have an idea for another activity you'd like to see us get involved in. We're a community working together to celebrate our city's 50th anniversary. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Noah.
Yes, thank you. I did want to recognize much-needed rainfall that we just received and also go back to notice how important it is that we continue our conservation efforts. As you may know, the state's in a historic drought situation, and we as Morro Bay depend on our state water supply for our primary source over the last number of years, and there are a lot of questions about the future of that supply. So what we're doing right now is basically drawing from a bank of state water that's in the San Luis Reservoir over 100 miles away, not in San Luis Obispo County. And there are a lot of questions about whether the state will even be able to deliver that water if this drought continues and the 0% allocation of state water continues as projected. So what that would mean is we're living off of a bank, and the potential is the state could turn off the pumps to that state water system. And we'll be talking a little more about this tonight in a future agenda item coming up. But it's so important for all of us to conserve water right now because we're living off of a bank that we're not adding to. And what that means is every gallon that we can save now reduces the pressure on us in the future. And that pressure will come in the form of increased costs and demand on our local supplies, which are at this point very challenged. So I encourage you all to pay attention to a mailer that you should receive from the city with information about what we're asking you to accomplish with your conservation efforts. And to push yourselves, friends, and neighbors to do everything you can to save as much as possible. So thank you for your help in this effort.
Thanks, Noah, for reiterating that announcement. At this time, we'll bring it back to council, and we have public presentations at this time, and our Chamber of Commerce will be doing a presentation for us.
Poke me in the eye.
Okay. You're good.
Okay. Sorry about that. Good evening, City Council and Mayor. I thank you for this time. I am Jennifer Redmond with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and I'm the president for 2014. And I thank you for the partnership that we have had with the city in economic development. And due to time constraints, I will highlight my report in front of you and also on the screen. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, first slide is the mission. The Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce is a nonprofit organization that promotes the community's economic vitality, quality of life, and provides a united base for the business community to advance and prosper. Our mission is creating a strong local economy while promoting the community and providing networking opportunities and being a liaison between business and government. You can see by our screen here that we have a wide representation of people from the business community on our board. We do have three open positions, and we're looking right now to fill them with different people besides what we already fill in here. We also have a director that we are right now in the hiring process for. We are accepting applications until February 17th, and then we'll start making decisions from there. The plan to increase membership and benefits to the members. That's the most important thing right now for our board of directors, and we are very committed. We are making face-to-face contacts with the business community. We are doing that through our forums. We had a very successful one in January. Over 40 people from businesses and community members attended. We're also meeting with key partners one-on-one. An example of that is the TBID, the Avocado Margarita Festival, Morro Bay in Bloom, many different organizations. We're doing small focus groups to find out how each team and organization is doing in Morro Bay and what we can do to help them. We also are using our ambassador program. We are establishing them to go to businesses face-to-face, one-on-one, and share with them the chamber's events, the changes, and what we're doing to help promote them in the city. Benefits to members, revamping our benefits to members. A couple good examples are we have a wonderful Saturday's Farmers Market. We're going to start having a chamber table down there to promote Morro Bay and the chamber, and also let members have their every week represent themselves at that chamber so they can meet the different community and different visitors at our table. We're working on having a table at different organizations such as Harbor Festival, Morro Bay 4th, to have the chamber table there to represent, again, the members and the community. We're doing cross-networking and marketing between members, discounts and promotions for shop local, group marketing ideas, and also working on better networking and showcasing forums for businesses. A couple exciting things that the Chamber is doing right now is we're working on a mobile app. It's for locals and visitors to find Chamber members. When they come in, they can download the app to their phones and see the listings of all different businesses for whatever they're looking for. Vacation rentals, restaurants, hotels, all different things. We're also developing a new website. So there's a lot of exciting things that are going on at the Chamber right now. To highlight some of the events we're involved in and promotions, as you know, we had a very successful Avocado Margarita Festival. We brought 9,000 people in attendance to that festival. Over 70 vendors, that's local vendors and outside vendors that came, and we also had over 50 local volunteers. And it's really collaborating to bring a festival like that together. We needed to use chamber members, local volunteers, the Rotary, city staff helped. It was really a wonderful event that we all came together. We were able to raise over $4,000 for the Morro Bay High School cheerleaders. We're also able to raise over $3,000 for the Morro Bay High School music boosters. Another way we are helping to promote is through our film commission. Janice Peters and Karen Moss are working very hard on that and having some success of promoting Morro Bay as a destination for films. And then, again, our farmers market. And in your packet, you will see, I don't know if I can, where's the camera? You can see we have different flyers that we worked with to promote those things. So we have that and the film festival. Okay? How are we communicating with members in the community? That's very important to us. We really are working hard on making sure we're communicating clearly, appropriately, and informing. We are doing that through our weekly blasts. It goes to chamber members, city councils, and other communities, other chambers. It hits over 500 individuals. We're also doing our monthly newsletters that will help with sign ordinance in the water facility meetings, forums, surveys, and collaborating with other organizations. As Nancy said, with the 50th, we joined them and had a very successful group. Financial projection, as you can see, this is showing gross revenue for 2013. We had membership, economic development, Avocado Margarita Festival, and Saturday's Farmers Market. Our projected budget for 2014, as you can see, we're ramping up our membership to 80,000. We have economic development in that area too, depending on situations. We have Margarita Festival. We're vamping that up to 150,000. And we have Saturday Farmers Market, and we're trying up that to 20,000. And then the incubator business that's starting.
Okay, Jennifer, as just being mindful of time.
I thought you said
That's okay.
That was a quick 5 minutes. Sorry.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. So with our economic contract with the city, you can see what we did last year. We really are trying to help retain and strengthen and expand businesses in Morro Bay. We consulted with over 60 businesses, an array of businesses. We have collaborated with Mix and Mingle, Shop Local, and the Street Map, and that was between us and the visitor centers collaborating together. We have referred and helped with EVC, SCORE, Small Business, and Cuesta College. And really one thing that we need to be said is that we give advice and information to many that call for business licenses, vacant business locations, websites, and who to contact in the community to help them. The main things are we have the three incubator businesses and the radio station. They're up and going, all going to be going in March, and we're very excited about that. We also, have done the forums. We've done small groups with the sign ordinances, and we continue to hopefully work with the city on those things too. So at this time, we are recruiting for a new director of operations and restructuring our organization. We'd like the opportunity to sit down with you in the future and discuss those strategies. And just to conclude, we thank you very much for your partnership with the rent assistance with the city for the Chamber Office Center building, and it has helped a lot of people in sharing that opportunity. And I think this is one of the most important slides right here, because it shows you that having that office, it helps three Embaker businesses. It helps their radio station, and also on-site business outreach with EVC, SCORE, Cuesta College, Wounded Warriors, Morro Bay Group, Central Coast Seafood Association, Chamber members, city council members, library, many people are also using that, and we thank you for letting that happen for them and for us. And in conclusion, due to the Chamber being a 120-year reputation of the Chamber of Commerce World Organization, we handle hundreds of calls, emails, and letters monthly about the city commerce, tourist destination, and business community, and the Chamber is happy that we can do that, and we hope for a successful partnership in the future with you and the Morro Bay community. Thank you, and sorry
right.
for the time.
Thanks, Jennifer. Any questions from council on anything to my left or to my right? Any questions? Okay. Thanks
okay.
for the presentation.
Thank you so
Appreciate
much.
It. All right, great. Moving on, we've got an agenda we need to work through. So at this point, we will open it up for public comment, but we do have a business spot, and that would be Trevor Green for Fishbones. And following Mr. Green, we'll open it up for public comment. Welcome.
How's everybody doing this evening?
Good. Hi.
Thanks for having me. My name is Trevor Green. I'm the general manager of Fishbones Restaurant here in Morro Bay. I just want to come and give you guys a little brief history of Fishbones. We just opened in May. Been open for a little over 9 months now. We started out as a family-run business. It was a dream that wanted to have a family-owned restaurant and have generations of family work through on the waterfront and have a successful restaurant. So I teamed up with Jack and Maria Lovelace out of Shell Beach, and we also teamed up with our head chef, Rebecca, and we kind of collaborated and tried to make a fun and exciting, local, fresh, affordable menu for everybody here in Morro Bay. I've grown up here my whole life. I graduated Morro Bay High School, and you know, a lot of our business comes from tourism over the summertime, and that's what a lot of menus are catered towards, and we try to do something a little different. You won't see clam chowder on our menu, you won't see fish and chips on our menu, but you will see a lot of fun and exciting stuff. From stuffed artichoke with crab to shrimp nachos to roasted dates stuffed with goat cheese and wrapped in prosciutto. We can go down to our entree items that we have, and we have a fresh sea bass with a miso mustard accompanied with a coconut scallion rice and fresh asparagus is what we're doing right now. Also, we do a calamari steak that's different than anybody does down here. It's not tubes and tentacles. We do a full steak that's marinated and delicious. We do filet and lobster. You know, I came from a steakhouse, and we try to incorporate some of that down on the Embarcadero. So we've just been having fun doing that so far. Our menu ranges anywhere from $15 to $39, and the $39 is getting you an 8-ounce filet and a 6 to 7-ounce lobster tail with all the sides. The other thing that I really wanted to touch on was we're located at Rose's Landing. So if anybody has trouble, that's kind of been the biggest thing we've been dealing with, is people realizing where we are and how to get into the restaurant. So we are at the main building at Roses Landing, 725 Embarcadero, and we are upstairs. If you're looking, the main entrance used to be on the right-hand side of the building. The main entrance is now up front, and if you're going to get to us, you need to go up the stairs of the elevator. So we're working on signing and trying to get that taken care of to try to help some of the locals not come up the side where Roses used to be. So we're really working on that. Trying to think, I had a whole speech plan, but that kind of goes out the window when you come up here.
You're doing great. Everybody's hungry.
So, that's just our main goal. I've teamed up with all local beer and wine providers, so all our beer is local here in California, all our wines from Paso and Edna Valley. And like I said, we're just trying to do fresh, local, and affordable and, you know, cater to the locals that are here in Morro Bay. So I just want to thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'll be down. We're open 4 to close Monday through Saturday, and we also just started doing happy hour 2 to 4, 7 days a week.
And so, what time is closing?
That's to be determined down on the Embarcadero. We try to stay open about an hour after our last table, okay. So anywhere from 9 to 11 o'clock.
Trevor, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, with that, I'll open it up for public comment. Anybody like to speak to anything not on the agenda at this time may do so. Please come forward, state your name. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I've got an exciting thing to talk about today because 2 weeks ago we talked about conservation of water. So Rob suggested that how much water did I collect on the last rainfall? Well, this is my system. It's in the backyard, and I got 8 barrels lined up, and you can see the top where I got my water draining from the top of the second story all the way down to the rain gutters, down into the barrels. My second slide shows, this is what I adapted this year because there is an overflow, and it really overflowed on that last rain, so I put up 3/4-inch pipe into the last barrels, and it goes into my garden. And I'm going to extend it another 10 feet if we get another rain. The yellow barrels, the yellow and the red buckets over there, those are the ones that come off the roof, but they hit the pavement, so I put those water things there so I can get more water. And the third slide shows, now this is a little shed. It's only 12 foot long, and then I put a rain gutter on top. And you can see I got 5 barrels. 3 of them are full from the last rain, or the first 2 rains, and it's been 3 rains we've had so far. But you can see the ones that are on the building over there on the front of the shed. I water those about once a week. Now, I use about 3 gallons a week out of each barrel, and there's 32 gallons, so you can do the math yourself. When you got 12 barrels, it can last you almost the whole year. And the fourth slide shows the system that I have set up, and that green, or whatever you call that color there, that's what I use to dip into the barrels. Now, in between the barrels, I have where it connects one to the other to the other. The mistake I made on the one with wheels, don't buy that kind of barrel because the handle, it will leak out there, so I got to replace that one. I put putty and stuff on it, but it still seems to want to leak on me. And then the last slide, is there another? Yeah, this shows inside the barrel. And just think, that's nice, clean water, no chlorine, and your plants love it. Trust me, they do. They really grow nicely. I got about 25 potted plants. Now, miners, as I understand it, may have a sale when they're 20% sale off, so you can save $2 per barrel. What might be a good time for you if you're thinking about this. And there's another slide I have not used. I used to raise a lot of worms down in the Bay Area, but then, okay, just one quick
thanks,
question.
Gary.
Okay. Save money by having worms because you don't have to put garbage down the garbage disposal. I'll talk about that next time.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council members, city staff, and fellow residents. My name is Jeff Eccles. I'm a resident and business owner here in Morro Bay. Imagine, if you would, for a moment that you have a child, and that child has decided to get involved in a local sports program. and you're really excited that your child wants to participate. You know that your child will learn about team building, his or her esteem will be built, and they're going to get involved with something that's bigger than themselves. So you're so excited as a parent, you rush down to the Parks and Rec department, and you go to sign your child up, and you realize that it costs $110, $120 or so, plus the equipment costs on top of that. And you have a dilemma as a parent at that moment because you realize that you can't afford the cost to have your child participate in this program. That's where the Morro Bay Community Foundation comes in. The Morro Bay Community Foundation exists to financially assist those families that have children that otherwise would not be able to participate in our Parks and Rec programs. So I've got a win-win situation for you tonight. I have a way for you to help and at the same time score some points with your sweetheart, significant other, or wannabe sweetheart. The Morro Bay Community Foundation, this coming Saturday, February 15th, is presenting a romantic comedy called Love Letters. It's a lot of fun. A ticket only costs $20. 100% of the proceeds of this event goes to the Morro Bay Community Foundation and toward these scholarships to help children participate in the sports and rec programs. We have a motto that every child deserves an opportunity to play. And we stand behind that motto in our actions and the things we do. So again, this is your way to help. Take your sweetheart out to a wonderful event. Here's how you can buy tickets. You can go online to eventbrite.com and spell Bright, B-R-I-T-E. It's eventbrite.com. Simply type in Morro Bay Love Letters and you'll have the opportunity to buy tickets. You can call me at my office, 800-396-6910. 800-396-6910. We'd love to see you come out this Saturday evening, February 15th, 7:30 p.m., right here in this room for Love Letters and support the children in our community who want to play in our sports and recreation programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Public comment is still open for those who'd like to speak at this time for two items not on the agenda.
Good evening, Nancy Castle here to thank everyone for the waiver that was given last City Council meeting for use of the Betts Hall for our community dinners on Monday night. We've had two dinners since we came before you, and at both of those evenings we had over 25 people attend. They weren't the same people each night. We are getting a few regulars. I love it. And it's a really wonderful thing. It's a growing thing. This next week, Monday night, we will be eating outside because of a previous arrangement to use a portion of the Vets Hall, and we'll have a fire out there. So if anyone wants to come down and see what we're doing, the meals are at 5 o'clock. We are here at 4:30. And I'd really like to invite people to come down and see what it is we're doing and perhaps offer to help, because we can use additional help. There's lots of opportunity for service. And if people know someone who might be reluctant to come down but are in need, invite them to come down and see if they might be of help. It would be a way of spreading the word. I also want to let people know that there will be a Estero Bay Alliance for Care meeting next week, Thursday, February 20th, 3:45 at St. Timothy's Church. And one more time, I'll read the mission statement of EBAC. The Estero Bay Alliance for Care is an all-volunteer network of organizations and individuals dedicated to enhancing the quality of life for local homeless and in-need citizens through outreach, education, and liaison with appropriate agencies and organizations. And I invite everyone who wants to come to an EBAC meeting just to see what it is we do to come on down to St. Tim's next Thursday, not this Thursday, at 3:45. And then I'd also like to bring everyone's attention to an event that's going to be at the Madonna Expo. It's the Central Coast's largest health and fitness expo, March 22nd and 23rd. There'll be more information about that. It's free to everyone, and there are a lot of health screenings offered at this. So if you know people who need that sort of thing, please let them know and offer them transportation if you can, and let's make this a real powerful, successful healing event for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. At this time, seeing no more public comment, I'll close public comment, and we have one more guy standing up. Come on up. Thank you.
You closed on me pretty fast there, Mr.
Yeah,
Mayor.
Yeah, it was.
Good evening. My name is John Barta. First, I'd like to announce that the lawsuit that I brought against the Attorney General and Secretary of State's offices has ended favorably. The Superior Court declared the statutes which I opposed to be unconstitutional, and judgment has been entered. Second, I'd also like to discuss the attack against our town and Councilman League last week by New Times reporter Colin Wrigley. Let's get the facts straight. George League always wants to do the right thing for our town, and this was no exception. Councilwoman Nancy Johnson and former Councilwoman Carla Wixom are all on the Morro Bay 50th Community Committee. In order to make the celebration as nice as possible, the committee decided to raise donations from our community by having a $50 per plate donation dinner for 200 people. As a town booster, George wanted to make the dinner something to be remembered. Unfortunately, the committee could only afford to spend $15 per person on the meal. To a guy like George, this is not an insurmountable problem. He just donates a bunch of his time and over $1,500 out of his own pocket and adds it to what the committee can afford and serves 200 people the following: hundreds of sushi appetizers, plus prime rib, plus roast duck, plus jumbo Gulf shrimp, plus lobster thermidor, plus vegetables and more. As a former event planner, I can say with certainty the hotel price for such a banquet spread would be well in excess of $60 to $75 per person. But George did it for $15 per person and $1,500+ out of his own pocket. As a result, the event was a major success for our town. Remember the shocking statement that was made by an Air Force major during the Vietnam War that in order to save the village, we had to destroy it. We remember that statement because of its perversity. He had things exactly backwards, saving the town by bombing it to rubble. Well, Colin Wrigley got things exactly backwards, too. According to Wrigley, the fact that George took money out of his own pocket to do something special for our town allegedly puts George in some kind of financial conflict of interest. Such nonsense. The folks who fed this story to Colin Wrigley and who would wag their tongues about it should be ashamed. You do not save our town by destroying it. George is a builder and not a destroyer. So I want to thank George and Nancy and Carla for doing a good thing. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, John. Public comment is still open.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council, Barry Brannon, Morro Bay. I'd like to talk about water. Water is on everyone's mind. I think the thing that really reminds me every day is when I take a walk on the beach and I see the two white buoys that are just north of the rock. They remind me that every day we pump 1 million gallons of water into the ocean. Now, if you do the calculation there, they don't talk about gallons when you're talking about this kind of quantity. They're talking about acre feet. That's approximately 3 acre feet a day we dump into the ocean. Well, I talked to a pretty major avocado farmer in the area, and I was told that they are willing, because of their high-value crops, to pay the city or anyone $1,000 per acre feet. So that means every day there's $3,000 of revenue that is missing. Now, I know it costs to make that, and I've also found that it costs about half. You could make treated water good enough for the farmers for about $500 per acre foot. So you can net $1,500 a day, every day, 365 days of the year. Now, we are going to have trouble with the water we have. It would be wonderful to put it back in the wells, but, and we're always talking about the cost, but to throw away When I was young, I was told, waste not, want not. And I think someone showed us how they're capturing the rainwater. That's wonderful. But we really need to capture our water and treat it. And the quicker we can get a water reclaim facility online, we've wasted 5-6 years trying to do a dance before the Coastal Commission, ignoring the rules and laws. And now let's get together. Let's come up with a plant quickly, come up with a design quickly, and we can save ourselves from this water problem if we'll please get work together. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is still open. Seeing no more for public comment, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Thanks for everybody's comments. Any other closing remarks from council? Seeing none. We do have a consent calendar, and we do have the we are afforded the public comment for anything on the consent calendar. Anybody who'd like to speak to anything on the consent calendar may do so now. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And anything on the consent agenda that anybody would like to pull, I'll look to my left. George, Christine, Nancy, Noah.
A7 and A8.
A7 and A8. Okay. Anything else? Do I have a motion to approve items, all items on the agenda with the exception of A7 and A8?
So moved.
I have a motion by Christine Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nancy Johnson. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. 5-0. And item A7, Nancy.
Okay, just for our audience out there, if they don't know, A7 is a resolution of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, authorizing and directing the installation of stop signs on Fresno Avenue and Marina Street. Also, as part of this, excuse me, A8 is a resolution of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, establishing a policy to guide the installation of stop signs. So what we have here, as near as I can tell, is a resolution deciding what to do about a stop sign, then a resolution following to justify the decision. Now, I took some time this weekend and toured some of these neighborhoods, and along with some friends of mine who helped me with this, I don't see that the problem is more stop signs, aside from the fact that you're putting the cart in front of the horse. The problem that we have up there is the vegetation in the right-of-way. We even stopped at some corners that had stop signs, and because of the vegetation that was in the city's right-of-way, you still couldn't see if you could cross the street, stop sign or not, until you pulled way out into the intersection. So I think rather than going and resolving to put in more stop signs, we need to look at enforcing the rules regarding our right-of-ways, especially on corners.
Anything else? Do I have a motion to approve items A7 and A8?
I would actually like to give Mr. Lavick a chance to comment.
Sure.
As you may recall, these two items are a result of the last city council meeting. We had discussion on both the Marina Fresno sidewalks plus the policy that came back up through the Public Works Advisory Board. They made recommendations that we grant the citizen request for stop signs at that city council grant the city the citizen request for stop signs at Marina and Fresno Avenues, and then Marina Street and Fresno Avenue, and then also approve a policy that lays out the procedure for installation of stop signs. The analysis of the criteria or warrants for stop signs at Marina and Fresno was not met, but that does not preclude the governing body or the council in this case from approving stop signs and that's specified in both the California Vehicle Code and our own vehicle section of the Municipal Code. So council did direct staff to prepare a resolution for the approval of stop signs at Marina and Fresno. The second item is to establish some criteria for when we do get these citizens' requests in, how to evaluate them and what streets they may apply to. And basically is these kind of discretionary stop signs should only be used in on local residential streets, not on commercial or arterial or collector streets, because they have a higher level of analysis is required for stop signs there. So in a nutshell, maybe not so much of a nutshell, that's my story.
Okay, thanks, Rob. So and I think that since you went through the explanation there, I think the other part of that is that the policy is basically a guideline to allow this process to go forward, and if a citizen group within that intersection, it meets all those criteria, then it's at the citizen's expense to install that stop sign per the policy.
Sure, and then it also still requires to meet the vehicle code and city code requirements,
sure,
council resolution that directs the installation of that stop sign.
So it's kind of an opportunity to go through this policy instead of having to go before council and hear an item whether or not council wants to decide whether or not a stop sign goes through. We have a policy that basically allows our public services director to make that call, and it still comes at the expense based on the policy of the citizens. Okay, thanks.
Could I ask
Noah for a minute? Sorry.
Yeah, and I'll just close my comments by saying the other important element to this for me was the 70% signatures from the neighboring people within 300 feet, neighboring properties. That puts the onus on whoever's bringing the petition forward to make sure that there is strong buy-in from their neighbors before this was put in. So I think this is a strong policy, and it's, like you say, going to remove the council from having to wrestle with these arbitrary decisions,
sure,
in the future.
Nancy?
Just one more quick comment and question for Mr. Livick. I did notice up there that one of the corners they had severely cut their plants. There's another corner where there's a lot of planting going on, and I'm wondering what the city policy is on overgrown plants and even in some cases huge rocks that are put on corners in the city right-of-way.
So we do allow people to landscape within the right-of-way. Otherwise, it would become kind of a barren wasteland for that section of right-of-way in between the street pavement surface and their property line. It's our streets are not as wide as our right-of-ways are. Typically, a lot of places, we have 80 feet of right-of-way and maybe only 25, 30 feet of street. So it is allowable to landscape that area. The site distance limitation for uncontrolled intersections is there's a site triangle that extends 15 feet on each leg of the property line. Then you cut a diagonal between there, and you don't want vegetation that is above 30 inches or below 7 feet. So you can have trees in that area because generally the trunk of the tree is not a inhibitor to site distance. You don't want kind of the shrubby in-between growth there, although there's a lot of that planted in town. And we do have to send letters out to property owners, sometimes more than once, to encourage them to trim their own vegetation. If that fails, the last letter goes out and tells them city crews will be trimming that vegetation, and then we bill the property owner for that trimming. So that's in the code section on site distance triangles where that comes into play. On controlled intersections, there's some more latitude. Vegetation can, because you're assigning the right-of-way by those stop signs, so you're assigning the right-of-way to the legs that don't have stop signs on them, so you can allow more encroachment into that site distance triangle.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. I really appreciate it. So people who have problems with corners in their neighborhood could also contact you about overgrowth of vegetation. In addition, that's another alternative to another stop sign, right?
Yes, it is. That would be probably our Number one way to solve an intersection problem is to get the site distance cleared and not have to put a stop sign in. And they can let us know through the Let Us Know module on the city's website. And there's a section in there about site distance traffic issues, and that would be the perfect opportunity to let us know. Or they can call our office is another way. If somebody doesn't have internet access, we do take phone calls. It's kind of challenging to navigate through our phone system sometimes, but there will be a menu item at 772-6261 for traffic issues. And then or just email a staff person is a third option. First initial, last name at morrow-bay.ca.us works also. So we have many different ways to communicate with us.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
So any motions on items A7 and A8?
Yes, I'll move approval of items A7 and A8.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Noah, a second by Christine. Any discussion?
Brief discussion. Just that I just wanted to make that quick comment that this went through a lot of public process, so it isn't as if arbitrarily we've been placing stop signs, and that the PWAB reviewed this and then made the recommendation to the council. And I think I like to just respect when citizens come forward and ask for something that we do respond. In this case, we responded positively for this neighborhood, but yet we're not going to be continuing that kind of practice by creating the policy, I think is a smart move for us. So just wanted to make that comment. And I think we had a very good discussion about this 2 weeks ago at our council meeting.
Thanks. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
We have a motion of 4-1. Did I hear you were? Okay, so we had a motion of 4-1. That was Nancy. That was a dissenting vote on that. Okay, that concludes our consent calendar. I think at this time we have our business public hearing at 7 o'clock. If we can just take a 5-minute break and be back at 7 o'clock, we'll start our public hearing at that time. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. We're moving on to public hearings. We've got two items on the public hearings. We have a secondary unit ordinance to discuss and the annual water report. Both items are important and lengthy. We're going to try to expedite our conversations through this as best we can. And then once we get to new business, I'll ask council if they would mind making some adjustments and having our mid-year budget moved up to the first item on the new business, and then we'll discuss that at that time so we can get done with that, and then perhaps the lease site agreement and followed by the restroom discussion. So at this time, item B1 is a review of a draft zoning text amendment amending section 17.48.320 secondary unit ordinance, and that would be Mr. Livick and Ms. Jacinth.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Jacinth will present the staff report.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the Council. Tonight's item before you, as you said, is a review of the draft zoning text amendment, which would amend section 17.48.320 of the zoning ordinance. Just to give you a little bit of background, the purpose of this amendment is to modify the current regulations and comply with the amendment made in 2002 to state law, which is Government Code Section 65852, also known as the second unit law. The law requires that cities set standards for the development of secondary dwelling units with ministerial review in an effort to increase the supply of affordable housing units while ensuring that those units remain compatible with the existing neighborhood. Staff would like to clarify and point out that nothing in this amendment would affect or lessen the requirements of the city's certified local coastal plan or the requirements of the California Coastal Act in regards to establishment of ministerial standards. staff has been in contact with Coastal Commission staff as recently as yesterday regarding the city's proposed zoning text amendment with confirmation that no changes are proposed that would be inconsistent with coastal requirements. The intent of the state legislature is that any second unit ordinances adopted by local agencies have the effect of providing for creation of second units, and that provisions in these ordinances relating to matters including unit size, parking, fees, and other requirements not be arbitrary, excessive, or so burdensome as to unreasonably restrict the ability of homeowners to create second units. So in the staff report, staff has provided an overview of recent timelines. This has been before council before, and a summary of action that was taken most recently at the Planning Commission meeting of October 16th, 2013. And so in general, the council direction at its June 11th, 2013 meeting was to direct staff to bring back this zoning text amendment to Planning Commission to review the second unit ordinance and provide Planning Commission opportunities for input regarding the proposed changes. Commissioners reviewed and made two motions reflecting recommendations to council for their review and consideration. The two motions passed by Planning Commission would, the first one would reduce the allowable size of secondary units to 900 square feet, allowing up to 1,200 with a conditional use permit. And this is consistent with what our current zoning ordinance states. State Government Code Section 65852.2, paragraph D, does allow cities to establish minimum and maximum square footages. The maximum allowed is 1,200 square feet. The second motion was to state that tandem parking should not be prohibited outright, but should be allowed with a conditional use permit. And again, State Government Code Section states that parking requirements for second units shall not exceed one parking space per unit or per bedroom, which is also consistent with current code requirements. It also states, and it's kind of a mouthful, so I'm just going to cite what the code section says. It also states that, quote, off-street parking shall be permitted in setback areas in locations determined by the local agency or through tandem parking unless specific findings are made that parking in setback areas or tandem parking is not feasible based upon specific site or regional topographic or fire and life safety conditions, or that is not permitted anywhere else in the jurisdiction. Commissioner's direction to staff was that for applicants who are proposing a second unit project that would trigger the requirement for a second parking space for a second unit. And so that's going to happen if you have a second unit with more than one bedroom. We don't see a lot of those in the staff report. There's an attachment that lists this, an Excel spreadsheet of units that have been permitted in the last 10 years. But that in addition to the primary dwelling requirements, that the design be that the applicant should meet the parking requirements, and then if unable, that tandem parking be only allowed with a conditional use permit to be approved at the Planning Commission level. Commissioner's discussion did also include support for allowing use of the front or side yard setbacks as parking spaces, although that was not expressly captured in the motion. Ordinance 576, as previously approved by Council in 2012, eliminated the requirement for a conditional use permit on proposed second units greater than 900 square feet. And so Planning Commission's recommendation is that this requirement be reinstated for a conditional use permit. These recommendations, as I stated, that were received by Planning Commission are consistent with Government Code Section and staff's determination, which would require that cities establish standards for ministerial review. If Council accepts Planning Commission's recommendation to modify Ordinance 576 in the areas of size, maximum size, and parking, secondary units would still have ministerial standards for permitting, but only for those projects up to 900 square feet or units that meet the parking requirement without a tandem design. Projects greater than 900 square feet or properties that are limited, as I stated, limited due to site constraints and what can only be done through tandem would be required to do a conditional use permit. Staff's recommendation is for Council to review and accept Planning Commission recommendations on modifications to Ordinance 576 and amend accordingly the Zoning Text Amendment A00-013 and direct staff to bring back a new ordinance to Council or modified ordinance to Council for introduction and first reading within 30 days. And I would like to just clarify for the record, I did receive an email communication from a member of the community, and with three questions. One, the first question I answered in my staff report, citizen was encouraging council to eliminate the 1,200 square foot option, and Planning Commission has made that recommendation to council. An applicant could still apply for a second unit that would be 1,200 square feet, but it would not be a ministerial process. It would be ministerial up to 900 square feet. The second comment was, please do not allow required parking in required front or side yard setback areas. And staff's response is that state government code section does not allow cities to outright prohibit parking in setback areas. And then the last comment was, if possible, require noticing to property owners within 300 feet. And the intent of the state legislature is that second units be done ministerially without a hearing. The city, of course, being in the coastal zone, does have coastal requirements, and any application that comes in for a second unit, although there would be the establishment of ministerial standards, it would also be subject to the administrative coastal development permit procedures, which is a director level approval. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you for that report. With that, any questions for staff at this time? George? No? Christine?
Thank you very much, and thanks for addressing the concerns from the community. Could you just speak just one more time on the first question? I think it was a little hard to understand, at least for me, the response to the first question, if you don't mind. Thanks.
Sure. So the comment that we got from the community was encouraging council to eliminate the option for someone to have a 1,200 square foot second unit. What the Planning Commission has said, and currently what our code says, is that a second unit can be a minimum of 300 or a maximum of 900 square feet. If you choose to build more than 900 square feet, and this is what the Planning Commission recommended in October, they are not saying you cannot do that. They are saying that it would be subject to a conditional use permit process. So the council approved ordinance number 576 in 2012 eliminated the conditional use permit requirement and said you could build up to 1,200 square feet. What commission is recommending is that be reinstated. And and the state government code doesn't require that cities allow up to 1,200. It just says that 1,200 is the maximum that could be included in the ministerial standards.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. That's all.
Thank you. Nancy, any questions? No? Okay, with that, at this time we can open up for public comment. Anybody would like to speak to this item, we may do so now. Please come forward. You have 3 minutes. State your name. Welcome. Mr. Barta.
Once again, good evening, Mr. Mayor. That was a very good report. Thank you very much. It's an issue with which you don't know, but others here know that I'm very familiar with. The purpose of secondary housing is to increase our housing stock without expanding the borders of a town outward, without having to build infrastructure for all of that, and it's a state mandate, okay? So I support the staff report, and I would just like to explain to people that the reason we have a 20-foot setback, you know, some towns don't have a 20-foot setback. Some places you don't have to do that. You can bring your house right up to the street. The reason we have a 20-foot setback is to allow people to park their cars, their guest cars, in their driveway, okay? So this proposed ordinance recognizes that 20 feet is to be used for parking. So, you know, more power to you. It's a good idea. I think it just has to be made clear that the Planning Commission can't be, you know, like arbitrary about the tandem issue, that they, you know, if the findings are there regarding layout and so forth, that they have to issue the thing if that's the way it has to be done, if there's no other alternative possible. And I think if you do that, that would be okay. I'd rather see a 1,200, but, you know, this is the process. So good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Barta. Anybody else for this? Please come forward.
My name is Homer Alexander. Supervisor Gibson once told me an interesting thing that I think pertains to this conversation. The only thing that Californians hate more than sprawl is density. Thank you.
Okay. With that, any more else for comments for this item? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Look to my right here. Any discussion items? Nancy, you want to start on that? No more discussion? Noah?
Yes, thank you. I did want to start by recognizing staff and Planning Commission's work on this. I particularly appreciate your outreach to Coastal to
affirm and get their input as much as they're willing to provide. And I think that helps us quite a bit. Looking back at where this was with the previous council and where it's gone to, I did have strong concerns about the previous adjustment to expand up to 1,200 with no trigger for a conditional development or a development permit, because I felt that we had gone through a pretty clear public process to get to what I thought was a fairly good compromise for the community, and we were kind of backing that public process out of the equation and decision. And so I think what we've done now is brought that back in, and I do notice that the Planning Commission had a really strong dialogue and discussion about this, and that there was probably a fair amount of their compromise, and I notice a fairly strong vote 4-1 in both cases. So at this point, I think that we're on track here with something that's going to work. I think the ability for a neighborhood to respond if there's something out of scale or in their opinion is out of scale for over 900 feet is there, and the noticing is there. So we're providing that protection and safeguard. And I particularly appreciate that between 300 and 900 square feet will be hopefully fairly easy for someone to accomplish, because the density and infill and also affordability of those units is important to me.
Thanks for that, Noah. George?
Yeah, we seem like we're caught in a revolving door. This keeps coming back. I feel like we're trying, like a mid-state marina. Anyway, yeah, I like the. I kind of disappointed in the rules about 1,200, but I think this is going to work out. It looks like they did a lot of good work here, and hey, we got to get this resolved.
All right, good, George. Thanks, Christine.
Yes, I would echo the previous two council members. Compliments to a good balance policy and a compromise policy that has been through the public process numerous times in the past 2 years. So I noticed that on the September 18th Planning Commission meeting, there was a comment in the minutes that said, you know, let's bring this back for some more public comment. And at the October 16th Planning Commission meeting, there was no public comment. So I feel like, okay, you know, we got through that process well enough that perhaps people feel like they've been heard. And we had some public comment tonight. I'll have to remind Supervisor Gibson of his quote. I bet we'll have to see if he stands by that quote. But in other words, you know, we seem to have a policy here that's meeting most people's needs. And then just two other items. The first sentence of this item, it's the purpose of this section is to provide affordable, low, and moderate income housing. If any of you have been watching the SLO County economic forecast that was presented a few months ago, workforce housing is a major shortage in our county, and it's been extensively discussed countywide, and it's seen as a real deterrent to increasing local jobs. So obviously people come here, they may not work in Morro Bay, but they choose to live in Morro Bay, work elsewhere. So if we have a shortage of affordable, low, or moderate income housing, that really holds us back as a community. And then also I do sit on the SLO County Housing Trust Fund, and we continue on that board and that commission to look for options and to create policy moving forward that can address some affordable housing. So given that is the goal, I'm happy to see us moving forward with some thoughtful policy on that here, keeping in mind that we want to maintain our R1 zoning to be ensure that our single-family neighborhoods are single-family neighborhoods, that they don't turn into duplex-type neighborhoods that might push the R1 zoning a bit. I think this is a good balance where it allows for that kind of secondary unit development that may be needed for various reasons for housing. And the 300 to 900 range is where we've seen the last 10 years about where people are building. So I think it feels like that's perhaps the right balance for Morro Bay. So I'm very happy to see this coming back, and I'll echo George that maybe this will be the end of this for a while and we can move it forward tonight. So I would be ready to move this forward this evening. Thanks.
Thanks for that. All the comments I would echo in many ways. We have circled around this one. I think to address the 900 square foot and the 1,200 square foot was done well. Not 900 square feet pretty gracious secondary unit. I think it also does address compatibility issues in our R1 zones and ensures that, you know, our neighborhoods don't meet that density level that Mr. Alexander was talking about, perhaps. But with that, I think the parking issue was well thought and well discussed with our Planning Commission, so we got a good recommendation there, and you know, I'm pleased with what their work and where we are right now. So, with that, I'd welcome a motion to move forward on this. If anybody would want to entertain one, if not,
I'll go ahead and move that we accept the Planning Commission recommendations and adopt the proposed secondary unit ordinance amendments as modified. And that we direct staff to make the Planning Commission revisions to the zoning text amendments and bring back the modified zoning text amendment to a future council for introduction and first reading. And that would be of modified ordinance 576 pursuant to the requirements of the local coastal program and amendment of Title 17 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code.
Second.
So we have a motion, a long motion by Noah. That was a lot. Thank you. And a second by George.
George.
Thanks for that.
We've got to make longer seconds.
Yeah. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0. All right. Thank you for that. Moving along. Now, well, let's get on to item B2. Item B2 is the 2013 annual water report and allocation for 2014 water equivalency units, and that would be Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. This item is coming to you pursuant to Chapter 1320 of our municipal code requires the council to set our water allocation units on an annual basis. This dates back to a ordinance that sets the city's population through ordinance number 266. So we bring back this item during the first part of every year. I want to talk a little bit about the ordinance itself and bringing back perhaps some changes to that ordinance when we bring this item to council, because the ordinance states we bring it to council in January, yet we don't have the data to fill in the tables till the end of January, so it always seems to arrive in February, and we should probably change our ordinance to reflect those realities. Last year, City Council allocated 50 residential WEUs and also 130% of those that to industrial commercial for a total of 115 WEUs. There were 20.54 residential WEUs allocated or issued and 0.73 commercial. So how do we get to 0.73 commercial? You probably wonder. That's commercial is actually based on the actual square footage. How we get to single-family residential WEUs is some of those are multi-family units, so we have less than a WEU for a multi-family unit. For a total of 20.91 water equivalency or units that were issued last year. Things have changed this year with our water supply portfolio, and this year is the first year in the state water project's 53-year history where 0% of our allocation has been issued. So we will not be receiving any state water that has to be pumped through the Delta this year. We will be receiving state water for water that we have in storage south of the Delta in San Luis Reservoir. And I think at our, at our last council meeting, I talked about that 3,073 acre feet of water stored in San Luis Reservoir would carry us through with good conservation for the next 3 years. things are changing in the state water world and how people are going to be taking that water. Many communities want to take all their water out of storage in San Luis Reservoir this year because they have local reservoirs to put that water in. That leaves Morro Bay in a bad situation. We don't have a surface water reservoir that we could take 3,000 acre feet of water and store it in for use in subsequent years. We would rely on San Luis Obispo County to put it into Lopez Lake for us, and then we're talking about methods to transfer some other sources of water back to Morro Bay. And these are, we initiated the discussion on Friday, so they're very infancy about this. So we don't have that 3 years worth of water in storage, and if we can't come up with a method to get that stored water from Lopez to Morro Bay, we'll have no state water for 2015, 2016, unless the drought breaks and the state allocates more state water. We will be relying on our local water supplies, and we talked about those a little bit last time. Our well fields are limited by, the Choro well field is limited by flow. When the flow in the creek is low, we can't pump our groundwater out of the Choro Basin without a declaration of emergency and petition to the State Water Board that we absolutely need that water supply. Our Morro Basin, along with our Choro Basin, have high nitrates in them, so we need to treat that water before it is used. Therefore, I'm recommending that council look back to what the city did a number of years ago and implement a section of the code section that I talked about earlier, 1320, but using 1320.080, which allows for a retrofit credits to allocate to require retrofits credits to allow for the issuance of the WEU. So in other words, somebody would need to go out and install some water conserving appliances, typically toilets, out in the community to gain that retrofit credit so they could use on the building of their house. And I do have an error in my resolution where it talks about a one-for-one offset. The actual code section requires that basically due to account for errors in estimation, that they require a two-for-one offset in that retrofit credit. So you can only use up to 50% of that retrofitted water for your retrofit credit. So you would have to do basically double the amount to get, you would have to do two WEUs to recapture that one WEU. And with that, I would recommend that City Council still allocate the 50 residential WEUs, but require retrofit to make that possible. Not that retrofit will be very easy, because we've already, per the plumbing code and per voluntary retrofits, we're down to 1.6 gallon per flush toilets. The new ultra-low flush toilets are 1.28 gallons per flush. So you're only picking up, you know, less than a half a gallon per flush, and the EPA thinks people flush about 4 to 6 times per day. And if you do the math on that, it's about 73 toilets to get one WEU, so about 140 toilets to get two WEUs. Not a insignificant requirement if you think on average a toilet costs maybe $100 and then another $100 for installation. We're talking about $28,000 to achieve that retrofit credit Unfortunately, our water resources are very low this year, and short of recommending zero WEUs, I think making this balance is one way to account for that. Staff will be looking at other types of retrofit credits other than toilets. You know, there's been improvements in rainwater harvesting, as we saw earlier in the presentation. There's not very good numerical standards, so the ordinance does put a lot of this review in staff decision, and then we report that back to council. So we'll be coming up with guidelines on how to credit WEUs for some of the newer types of water saving features, but just don't have numerical values for those at this present time. So that concludes my staff report, and I'm feel happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for that, Rob. Nancy, do you have any questions for Rob?
Actually, I have a couple. First, I remember when we went around putting in low-flow toilets several years ago, and I'm wondering if you need whatever number to get your own bathroom, where are you going to put them? I mean, almost everybody in this town already has the Toto or whatever it is, the low-flush toilet. Do we actually have enough sources for people to use for this?
Most everybody has the 1.6 gallon per flush toilets. There are toilets that have even lower water requirements, the dual flush toilets and the ultra low flow toilets at 1.28, which is the code requirement for new construction today, are those toilets. There are some additional types of plumbing fixtures that could possibly be implemented, some without changes to our municipal code. So waterless urinals in commercial installations save quite a bit of water, more than a standard toilet does. There's the composting toilet that we will require a minor change to our local implementing plumbing code to allow a composting toilet. Those are zero water usage, so you would basically be replacing quite a bit fewer units with those. Then we have to look at the how we may credit people for the rainwater harvesting type approach that could be implemented on projects. So while we want people to install, you know, drought resistant landscaping, typically you do require a little bit of supplemental water, and anything that we can reduce our outside water usage, and I think is a benefit. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of numerical standards for that.
So are we, for example, you've mentioned several things. The first two were basically toilet things, then the rainwater harvesting and new buildings, but also, for example, drought-tolerant landscaping. Is there any requirement or encouragement for people to do that? I know several years ago the city of Paso Robles paid people to remove their lawns. Is there anything like this possible here to encourage, maybe not pay them to remove their lawns, but encourage people to get rid of large lawns and go to drought-tolerant planting?
I think we could consider all those in a retrofit type situation where, for example, a builder instead of replacing 140 toilets, might look at a whole suite of measures. The way the code is written, they submit their proposal to the Public Services Department. We evaluate that to make sure that it makes good engineering sense for that retrofit. So,
okay, so that brings up two more questions. First, what are some of these other newer water-saving devices besides the ones we've just now talked about? For example, the new kind of water heaters that are on demand, or are there other things out there that people could use for the trade-off?
There's the on-demand water heaters where you don't have to leave the hot water running to get your hot water in the back part of your house. There's also a recirculating valve that can be put into your system that that keeps hot water circulating. Generally, you put it on a timer so you don't end up with, when you want to get a drink of cool water, you don't end up with a glass of warm water. So you generally time that for when your shower times are. Other water-saving features, of course, there's, you know, shower heads, faucets. I think we've already taken some of that low-hanging fruit, those easy, inexpensive things. Now we're having to look at some more costlier measures and maybe some things that maybe wouldn't have been considered before, like the composting toilet.
So let's say someone comes into your office tomorrow and wants to build a 900-square-foot secondary unit for their grandmother or their college student or something, and it's going to, of course, require a bathroom. So can they pick from these things what they're going to do to buy the units for that bathroom, or is it strictly buy 140 toilets?
I think the builder would propose their suite of retrofits that comes up with the kind of the 2-to-1 WEU replacement. They propose that to us and explain how they're going to meet that. So I was not here the last time this was implemented. I understand that there may have been a market in selling toilet futures that some of the plumbers went out actually marketed this as a feature that they could get you the toilet retrofits. They will get you the WEUs, and I would imagine that things would probably, that the free market system would take over, and some enterprising person would come up with a way to find a way to capitalize on this situation.
So, bottom line, if we approve this tonight, are we talking about just buying toilets?
No.
Or are we
talking about
this whole range of possibilities?
A whole range of possibilities, and okay, that would have to be submitted for our review and approval.
I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Noah.
Thanks for that information, and that addressed some of my questions. One thing I think is really important, Mr. Lavick, for you to point out, and it's in the staff report, but for the community to understand, is what we're talking about here is new water units. So if you could talk about effect there and the difference between those and renovations and so forth.
So as Councilperson Smuckler mentioned, that this is just for new WEU. So it's a house on a vacant lot. The majority of our development in Morro Bay these days is redevelopment. So we'll get a remodel, an addition. Generally, the number of bathrooms, the number of appliances in your kitchen does not generate more water. It's the fact that it's a single-family home. So it doesn't matter if it's a 1,000-square-foot home or a 5,000-square-foot home. It's still one WEU. So that's commercial, and some of the other land uses are calculated a little bit differently based on square footage or restaurants, number of seats in the restaurant that calculate the WEUs. But for simplicity's sake, residential remodels, additions, tear-down rebuilds do not require allocation of WEUs. It's just the new construction on raw land that would require the WUEs. Commercial, it's a little bit different. It's based on square footage, number of seats in a restaurant, let's say, for expansion of that use. Those are the basic two types of ways that are calculated.
And
that's specified in 1320 what that calculation is.
Okay. And with the affordable housing projects, how would that be affected?
The affordable housing projects would be the first off the list that if there was an affordable housing project proposed to be allocated those WEUs, and there's some latitude in the ordinance that would allow them to be exempted from the retrofit requirement, or they could be held to the retrofit requirement.
Okay. And obviously we're going to need to take some time if we go forward to develop these guidelines and the retrofit update. Would you be able to build in some stakeholder input outside of, you know, our city council meetings, possibilities for people to see a draft concept and provide inputs? We did receive a fair number of emails from one perspective or another on this, and it seemed like some really interesting skills and experience that could help inform our guidelines.
Well, we have one of the items that we're taking forward to our Public Works Advisory Board this month is on water and our water availability. So this will roll into that to start that discussion on perhaps some methods to talk about those retrofit credits. I'll look to the city attorney on implementation. The council could delay implementation, but it wouldn't allocate any WEs right now. So without allocating WEUs, no new construction could take place until that was allocated. I believe we had this discussion earlier, so it's...
Yeah, my understanding is you have to make an allocation if there is no allocation.
It's a de facto moratorium.
It's a de facto moratorium. So if you don't adopt a resolution tonight, then nothing can go forward that's new. That won't affect, like, a remodel. That doesn't change the use. But it would be a de facto moratorium.
Okay. And to confirm, what we're talking about tonight is not the 1-to-1, but a 2-to-1 offset.
The code does require a 2-to-1 offset.
Okay. And my last question would be, in your presentation, you did a good job of laying out the severity of our water supply situation. What you didn't really get into, and I'd like you to spend just a moment talking about what it means for us as the drought continues, if it does go to the point where we run out of the state water, or this run on the bank by other communities that have, you know, storage abilities. What would that mean to us in the form of cost and so forth to the community?
So if we're not have no state water available to use, unfortunately, we still get to pay for the majority of the cost of that state water because we have to pay for the debt service on the pipeline that we cause and all the infrastructure that we cause to be built to get state water here to Morro Bay. So we have about a $1,500 – I'm talking in round numbers, not exact precise numbers, about a $1,500 per acre foot, or about $2 million a year in debt service on the state water supply project. So we'll be paying that whether we get a drop of state water or not until that debt is retired. That was our agreement with the state. The next most available source, the cheapest source of water is fresh, uncontaminated groundwater. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of that. Our groundwater in the Choro Valley is limited by stream flow. Our groundwater in the Morro Valley is limited by high nitrate. So we need to run that through our brackish water RO units, or a portion of our desal plant. And what that does is kind of like your under sink unit at your home that you may have. It runs the water through a very fine screen or a membrane, and the molecules of that nitrate are bigger than the molecules of water, so the water can go through that membrane, and you end up removing that nitrate. Very high pressures to get that water through that membrane, which require big pumps, big motors, lots of electricity, about $1,000 an acre foot to make brackish water. Our next source of water would be to run our desal plant, so that we would be treating seawater to make that potable water. There we're removing even more chunks or big contaminants, salts that we're removing, mainly salts we're removing from that. Bigger motors, higher pressures to force that through the membranes to remove the salt from the water, about $1,600 an acre foot to treat that. So it has a very high economic impact on our water fund. So we will be using our reserves to supply water, because we probably can't cover all of that in our rates. Fortunately or unfortunately, if state water was available at 100%, our best source of water is state water, because we're paying for it anyway. The cheapest source of water is clean groundwater. Unfortunately, that is limited supply, not just here in Morro Bay, but all of the coastal aquifers, it's in short supply. In the future, reclaimed water will make a very large portion, especially with the direction from both at the federal and state level to implement regulations for direct potable reuse of reclaimed water. It makes it very much more convenient to distribute reclaimed water if we can plumb it right back into our existing water distribution system.
Okay, thank you.
Hopefully I didn't go into too much detail on water.
No, that's very helpful.
Okay, George, you have any questions?
Well, I think all the smart questions have been asked. I just want to know if Gary Johnson, how many flushes can Gary Johnson get out one of his barrels? And I know they do this in St. Thomas Island. I had a restaurant down there, and that's what they did. So maybe there's something to that.
Thanks, George. Christine?
Thank you very much. Just a question, Mr. Livek, before I get into a few questions on the offsets. The reason we're talking about the dire situation is that our water portfolio, can you remind us again in Morro Bay what our water portfolio is?
Our water portfolio consists of state water project. We have 1,313 acre feet a year allocation of state water. We have about a 2,900 acre foot drought buffer, so an insurance policy. That only covers us for when state water allocation is above zero, because when you multiply anything times zero, it still equals zero. We have stored water in San Luis Reservoir, which is stored state water, because we don't use our 100% of our allocation every year. We use something less than our allocation, so that water stays in storage in the state system, and it's intended to be used in these times of drought. Unfortunately, the way it gets managed, we may not have a whole lot of control over. Groundwater. We have 1,500 acre feet a year permitted extraction from the Choro Valley, about 500 acre feet a year from the Morro Valley. And again, I'm talking in round numbers. These aren't precise numbers. Our desal plant was permitted to provide 645 acre feet a year of emergency water for us. The reason I say was permitted, I think I go into this a little bit in our staff report. It was originally permitted in 94 for a five-year permit. That permit expired in 1999, about the same time that we're bringing, you know, other sources of water into Morro Bay. Not, you know, I can see that we were thinking that the desal plant wasn't going to be needed. We'd needed to comply with some permit conditions We did not do that. Now what we're doing is working with Coastal to get them their requirements to make this a permanently permitted facility. I just need to clarify this. Desal plant itself on Atascadero Road is permitted. It's the saltwater wells and our outfall line and some of the piping and cabling in between there that is not permitted. So one of the conditions of our outfall line and wells were to permit that desal plant locally, which we did. We just had some other requirements on the wells and outfall. So we're working on getting that permit. And they've asked us questions about its impacts to marine life, and we have years worth of testing where we can show that it's had, you know, no effect on marine life. It's in a very well mixed zone, as anybody that's been surfing at the Rock can attest to. You get mixed pretty well sometimes out there.
Okay. Yeah. So then, I know you've told us before, but just tell us again, what percentage of our water portfolio is reliant on state water?
We use, on a year-to-year basis, about 90 to 95% state water. But that's only because of the economics that are involved in it. If we didn't have state water, of course, we would have to use other sources to make up that need.
Okay, and then the debt service on the state water, currently, we will carry that debt service unless we reject state water.
I think we have to do more than just reject state
water. Can we do 90%?
We could do, running our desal plant, physically we can make enough water to serve Morro Bay. We just don't have, it's not permitted for 100% unrestricted use.
Okay, is that the permit that we're hoping to get?
That's the permit we're working on right now with Coastal.
Maybe in March,
maybe in April. It depends their hearing schedule and when they can get it on.
Okay, and then if that gets delayed, then you had talked about going for an emergency permit?
We would go for an emergency permit. And as I've talked to Coastal, I said, if it comes down to it, we need to run our desal plant to make water for our community, we will run our desal plant.
Whoa. Okay.
Isn't there a large desal plant over at the power plant?
There's a desal plant there. I'm not sure how large it is.
I was under the impression it was quite large. And you got the water already coming in there. It's just an idea.
Yeah, it's not that large. It works well, but it's not that large.
Make a bigger one.
Okay. Christine?
Okay. Yes. Thank you for bearing with me on this. And then we had talked earlier about we're going to have our water allocation from state water for 2014. But the concern today, because of the zero allocation that was announced historically for the first time ever in state water project, we are not anticipating to get our water delivery allocation in 2015 nor in 2016.
That's the word we've received through our contacts at the county. The county is the contractor for state water. We're a subcontractor. So they deal directly with CCWA, California, Central California Water Authority, and state DWR. We're second down on the list of we're not directly contracting for state water.
Okay. So therefore, the water we have unused but stored in San Luis Reservoir is the water we were counting on for those 2 years,
right?
15 and 16.
And if the allocations for 15 and 16 are above zero, the state will be running their facilities and we could deliver that water to make up, let's say it's a 5% year. Mm-hmm. We would get 5% through state water and then the rest of it would be made up in storage. But the state does not anticipate a 5% year for 2015. I don't think they can predict, I know I can't predict beyond that for drought. Like I said earlier, if I could, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this room if I knew when it was going to rain and when it wasn't.
Okay, thank you. So therefore, the reason we're talking about then retrofitting and a moratorium, de facto moratorium, is because we truly do have a serious water supply issue in the city of Morro Bay.
We do.
Okay, so walk me through a little bit. We talked about going to the Public Works Advisory Board to talk about the retrofit credits, but that would be after we pass this evening, correct?
We already had on our Public Works Advisory Board agenda to talk to them about water in general. So I was going to expand that discussion on the annual water report. In general, if the council were to pass the retrofit credit option, builders and developers could work with staff and present their proposal. We would review that and make sure that it meets the requirements of the ordinance. We still probably need to develop some guidelines on some of the non-traditional types of retrofit credits. For example, rainwater harvesting. I don't know how we numerically give a value to if somebody were to put in, you know, 5 rain barrels that would store 250 gallons of water and how that would be credited back. I would have to look to others to see how maybe how they've done it. And come up with, because it is a good, rainwater harvesting is a good public education, it's good outreach, it does save water. We do generally still want to have projects landscaped. I don't think we want to go to, you know, concrete everywhere or bare dirt. I think our desire is to still have some form of landscaping on projects.
Okay, and then therefore, last question on this, and then we'll need to, I'm sure, have a few questions from the mayor and public comment as well. What about projects in the pipeline right now in terms of the retrofitting and those kinds of things?
And I know I talked to a couple council people, and I'm supposed to get that number, and I did not get that number, but there are a number of projects in the pipeline in various stages of approval. There are projects that have been submitted that are not technically complete. I'll just give you the stages of where projects generally fall in the pipe. I also have a fair number of people that have just asked the question, what does it take for me to, and have submitted nothing yet, and they're just idling out there in the world. But, you know, this is a, you know, quite the serious situation, and I think at least minimum, those projects that haven't been applied for as of today would be subject to the new retrofit requirements.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Just in the spirit of moving the meeting along, I'll forego some of my questions because there's been so many great questions already. But I will ask just a couple.
Sure.
And regardless of the water situation that we're in, just to reiterate, this annual water report comes to us every year, whether or not we have a good water year or a bad water year.
Correct.
Okay. I do that kind of information question. And then going back to our ordinance 266, which you alluded to, that we are supposed to come back by January 15th with this water report. And so I guess, are we automatically in a moratorium if we don't meet it by January 15th? I think that's what I know it's kind of a loaded question, but
it's impossible to meet the January 15th date because the data isn't available, from what I understand,
that's
until
correct.
The end of the month. So, and until you actually adopt the next level of water equivalency units, you don't have an allocation for the next level of building. So without the allocation, you can't build.
Okay, so the allocation just continues from year to year until we make a ruling on this staff report tonight. And I think the question was earlier, if we didn't approve this tonight, then that would be a de facto moratorium. Is that the way I understood it?
That would be the effect. Whether we needed to take some additional steps to make sure it was in fact
okay.
a moratorium might be different.
All right, good. Yeah. Just wanted to clear that up. Thank you. With that, I'll just I think most of the questions have been asked and responded to, so I'll open up to public comment at this time. Anybody would like to speak to this item, please do so now. State your name. You have 3 minutes. Welcome, Mr. Barta.
Good evening. John Barta. This is just outrageous what's being talked about here, okay? We have the water. We have it for the next year. In March, we might get the desal permit. We've got water in Choro. We've got water in Morrow that can be treated through the brackish well water. We are not going to run out of water in Morrow Bay. This is all talking about future stuff. In the meantime, it's being proposed that you only have to do 140 retrofits. Now, help me with the math here. 10 houses would be 1,400 retrofits. 30 houses would be 4,200 retrofits. How many houses do we have in Morrow Bay? 4,500? So the next 30 houses that want to be built are going to have to retrofit every house in town. Now let's look at, people have to take this retrofitting voluntarily. All the houses now have 1.6 gallon toilets in it, okay? So you're going to go out and you're going to convince somebody that's got a 1.6 gallon toilet to put in a 1.2 gallon toilet voluntarily. So that you can do that 140 times, you're going to find 140 people willing to do that. I got news. A lot of people don't particularly like the 1.6 gallon toilets as is, and they're probably going to say, you know, the 1.6 is quite, you know, the bottom, and I don't want to go to 1.2. So the bottom line is this: this is in fact a building moratorium. Okay, I'm sorry I'm so strong about it, but this is just nonsense. What's going on here? It really is. All you have to do tonight is approve your annual water report. Period. Do that. Okay, and then there's no moratorium. Everything goes down smoothly. A few houses get built. You'll have the water for that. You're going to get your desal permit. You've got all this emergency options available. You've heard the Choro Valley, 1,500 acre feet, he says. The Morrow Valley, 550 acre feet. The desal plant, you know, we only use 1,000 acre feet a year, folks. Okay, we have redundancy after redundancy after redundancy. To rush headlong into a building moratorium and an outrageous, you know, when they were doing retrofits before, you got 10 toilets to retrofit to get one WEU. The plumbers were charging $10,000 for that one package. So now you're going to do 14 times that many. So the plumbers are only going to want, you know, $140,000 for your WEU package, which they probably won't be able to find 170 people in the whole town or 140 to even do it once. I mean, this is just outrageous. Do the water report. That's fine. Do the report. All this WEU unit thing, just take it out and revisit it, you know, sometime later when you know the picture. Don't be rushed into a panic thing here, which is what's going on. It is unnecessary. The State Water Project will be delivering water in the future. I assure you of that. I can't tell you how much
I thought it was a one-for-one. I didn't realize it was a two-for-one. I just can't even fathom trying to do 146 toilets in this town. That would be impossible. I agree there are other ways to try to come up with some water savings. I mean, going with tankless water heaters. Anybody that puts a standard tank water heater in to require them to have a recirc pump would definitely help. But the toilets going 146 homes would I don't see that happening. The other thing, by not voting something, I mean, we've got to do something not to create a moratorium in this town. Vacant lots prices are already down. They're not selling as it is. There's minimal building, so that's going to be a major problem. The other thing, people that are in process, I mean, people that went and just talked to someone in the planning department about building, that's not in process. Someone that have actually walked in there, paid a fee, first step is CDP. If you've walked in, you paid a fee, submitted for your CDP, which is the first step in the process, you're in process. So that's where the process starts, and you know, that's where it is. It's black and white. That's where the process starts, at least in my mind. And I think the majority of every builder in this area or any homeowner or, you know, lot owner. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kirk. Anybody else for a public comment at this time? Seeing none, bring it back to council. And Rob, maybe you can respond to Mr. Botter's comment about kind of the retrofit comments and how much water we have. I know you talked about the requirements for pumping. Maybe you can respond a little bit to that.
I
do agree that if you just did toilet retrofits going from 1.6 to 1.28 gallons of flush is probably not very viable. There would have to be other retrofits done to make a bigger difference. So the amount of water that we have for this year, we know that we have state water this year, 1,313 acre feet that we can pull from storage that can be delivered to Morro Bay. We do have permits in our groundwater basin for 1,100 acre feet in Choro, 500-ish acre feet in Morro. The problem is, as it doesn't rain here, those groundwater basins don't get replenished. They are at a finite supply. There's not an unlimited groundwater storage in this area. Saltwater desalinization, different story. We do have kind of an unlimited supply out there where we can draw salt water and run through our desal plant. And I do believe that we will have a permit this year to operate our desal plant. Very expensive water to run. We are asking the community also to conserve water. The governor, we've imposed our own water conservation requirements, and the governor set a goal of a 20% reduction. And we have already seen that here. I'd be negligent if I didn't point out that over the past few weeks since we've been under this conservation, we have dropped our daily flow requirements in our state water supply from 740 gallons a minute coming through that pipeline to 600 gallons a minute, so that we had to reduce that amount so we won't overfill our tanks here. So the community has done a great job in water conservation. It is the wintertime. It is cooler. Hopefully people aren't irrigating as much. As we move into the summer season and some of our vacation rentals become occupied and people want to irrigate, it's warmer. I think we'll have to see how well we're still doing under water reclamation. In my opinion, we're not going to get a significant amount of rainfall. There's not enough time in this water year to make up for that, the water needs of the state. We are at currently, I believe, the latest report is 17% snowpack conditions in the Sierras. So this year is a 0% year. The county water folks have told us do not count on state water next year either. Beyond that, I don't think anybody can reasonably predict what the rainfall is going to be.
Okay, thanks. Any other comments from council? Nancy?
I have.
Constructing, unless the commercial facility is adding square footage or expanding their operation, doesn't require any additional WEUs.
Thank you.
Noah?
I'll also add that the only additional WEUs that would be required in that case would be applied to the expanded square footage or use, not the the historic use.
Correct. So I can see a scenario where maybe a restaurant wants to demo and reconstruct, maybe even bigger. I would think that they would want to maybe do that expansion, but maybe have an agreement not to occupy that area until such time, so that they didn't have to get those. I'm kind of thinking out of the box and thinking out loud of a way that businesses could still move forward without triggering the WEU requirements.
Okay, I think you did a good job of responding to some of the public comment about the water is there, because looking around at everything I'm seeing, it's pretty clear that there's a strong chance the water isn't there. And
going forward, we need to be preparing ourselves for that situation, I think, very strongly. If we don't start taking action at this point, we're basically asking the existing community, whether it's a business or a residence, to take the burden of paying the cost of operating and paying for the debt service of the state water, as well as the increased cost of operating our desalination system, which is a very expensive proposal. And I think one of the things we can do tonight is pursue an update of our retrofit program. And I agree that there, if we approach that in the old style and philosophy, we're going to be banging our heads against the wall or putting them down one of those units that we like to use. We have a lot of opportunities of programs that haven't been explored or implemented. And we went through a good list. Mr. Livick, you mentioned a bunch of those tonight. I think Atascadero Mutual Water Company is a great place for us to look for ideas. One that I think might be worth considering is even a water auditor position that could be accessed voluntarily by community members to look at both internal and external use of irrigation and plumbing systems to identify leaks and help them correct those. And the thing I like about the retrofit program, if it's expanded to include some of the things we talked about tonight, dual plumbing and so forth, that is aiding in the financial affordability for the rest of the community and for the water system into the future. So I see a situation where if we, you know, some might say we should just do a complete moratorium and adopt an interim urgency ordinance and say, time out, we're not going anywhere. My feeling, if we were to go that route, would be that we're missing a chance to develop a driver to greatly improve our conservation efforts, and we don't currently have that driver. I think we could develop it, and I think this guideline process with input from the stakeholders can help get us there, and particularly looking at things like what Atascadero Mutual Water is doing. I'll also note that we have done a great job in conserving in the past, and it's fantastic to hear that the community's responded so far to our call to action, and that is something that we're going to need to continue to do. I'll note, though, as I look around the state, that Monterey, for example, is using approximately 60 gallons per day per person, where we're in the 115 to 120. So there's room for us to improve, and everything we do now is going to save the entire community money down the road. The thing that I shudder to think about is if we take the suggested path of no action, business as usual, we're putting ourselves in a situation where business as usual won't be possible. And I feel like working on this right now, taking a leadership approach to this, we're actually trying to salvage business as much as possible as usual and take advantage of all these great new ideas and concepts that are being utilized throughout the state and the country. So my feeling is let's move forward, let's update these guidelines, and make the adoption tonight. Obviously, we have to make a few slight adjustments to what the proposal is. And I think we should keep this on our radar with continual updates, because there is a chance we're going to get a miracle march or something along those lines that changes the whole scenario. And in that case, we can revisit this discussion and make adjustments as necessary. But right now, I'm not willing to just continue to let this run down the track knowing what could be ahead of us.
Nancy.
I totally and completely agree that we need to be prepared for the water shortages that are possible or may actually already be out there. I think the fact that our use of state water has already dropped just in a couple of weeks. So I would suggest that we pass the water report and then not give up on the allocation, but send it back to look at other options, at more extensive possibilities, and continue to work on it.
Thanks, Nancy. George, any comments?
Yes, ditto. I mean, I can't add anything to that, Nancy. That was perfectly put. I kind of just kind of smell moratorium on this myself, and I sure don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. And I think that things can be brought up to us better than retrofit and things like this. And I'm not saying that won't happen, but there's other things that we can do.
and I'd like to see that be brought forth.
Thanks, George. Christine?
Yes, thank you. It seems like we're agreeing on a general theme. I'm looking at the recommendation from staff in the staff report right now, page 93, and Mr. Levick, you've given us 6 recommendations. And just clarify for me if we can move forward if we were to approve this evening all but 5, excuse me, all but number 5, if we were to, let's say at this point, not approve the recommendation number 5, would that get us where we needed to go? It would be the same as last year, and then we would be adjusting the date to February?
We would have to bring back the ordinance revision to adjust the date, but if you passed all the recommendations but 5, it would be the same as last year, and then
that would be business as usual.
Business as usual. I would assume that you would want to see this brought back to look at options and sometime in the future about retrofits if that did happen.
What I'm thinking is this: to move it along, what, and I'm looking for council to discuss this idea. So if we take recommendation number 5 off the table, which is the one we've had a lot of vociferous response to at the 2-to-1 retrofit level, then you mentioned that Public Works Advisory Board is taking this up soon. Could we do there for what we did at Streets about a year and a half ago? Could we do a water summit meeting? Could you expand that? I don't know how your agenda is, but we could have a community-wide discussion about this. We could promote it as such and bring the public into the discussion. And then at that point, would we be able to revisit some options, a more of a menu approach for any kind of retrofits?
So the PBOAB meeting is next Thursday, and the agenda for this item was basically going to be a report on what my last report to council was and what council did tonight, and to look at if council did pass the retrofit program, what it might look like other than toilets, because toilets just won't get us there just on their own. So to present some of those ideas to them. As far as a water summit, I think we could hold a special PWAB meeting because we really don't have the time to get the public notice out there if we do want to get it well attended. So we would have to hold maybe a special meeting the first part of March to for that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great input. So to reiterate then, based on those comments of a special PWAB meeting, you know, we'd be able to accomplish the same similar success with the street summit. We would get our stakeholders in here to say, hey, look, this is the reality of what our retrofitting program does for us now and what we could be doing. But we've had a couple different conversations. One is to approve all 6 recommendations. One's to approve all 5, all but number 5 in the recommendation. Either way you look at that, to move forward tonight, we were looking at approving all 6. And so let me back up. I think we should agree, and most of us up here will agree, that you know, this is what poor timing this is. I mean, we've actually seen, you know, buildings start to recover. We're seeing those projects come forward, and we don't want to see that slow down. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to see the building proceed, whether they're new or remodels, where water equivalency units aren't necessarily required. So on one side of that, you know, with the remodel, you'll be able to see that continue considering the market and that. But as far as the 6 recommended items, if we were to approve all 6 recommended items, which I think is what was alluded to my right, then we would still be going to PWAB to look for recommendations on improving the municipal code 13.2.2.
Public services staff review that to make sure that it meets the 2-for-1 requirement.
Okay.
What I need to bring back for the code revision is the timing of this water report, because when this was written, we didn't have state water and we didn't have desal. Those are the two data points that take us a while to get back in, because DCEL requires outside lab work. State Water requires a couple of different agencies to pass that information down to us, and it takes some time, believe it or not. Even with the electronic records, it takes them a few weeks to compile that data.
Okay, so then the other question would be, if we were to eliminate five, then if we put, you know, a timeline on this to come back based on PWAB, how much time would that take, do you think?
Well, if we were to go to a special PWAB in the first part of March, let's say, let me get a calendar so I can maybe talk a little bit more intelligently about dates. So our current PWAB is scheduled, and we would give them an overview of water status, you know, this next week about that. And then in March, as far as a PWAB, I would think it would be sometime during the second or third week to get that public notification out. And then once we've had that meeting, we could bring that back to City Council probably as soon as the last meeting, depending on when that PWAB meeting happened in March, the last meeting in March or the first meeting in April for, I would say, for... since we haven't scheduled these, we don't know when people's availability is. If we're looking to bring it back, it would probably make sense to bring it back that April 8th City Council meeting to give some flexibility in scheduling the PWAB meeting.
Okay.
So now, you know, in the grand scheme of things, the number of WEUs that generally get allocated a year is fairly nominal compared to the number of units already out in town. And I don't think in the next 2 months... there could be a land rush to grab WEUs, but there's not that much vacant land left in Morro Bay either.
Okay. Noah?
So following up on that, how do you recommend that we make sure that we're holding up our responsibility to the existing community? And my feeling is of discomfort to just kind of go forward with business as usual for the next couple of months, which is what we're talking about doing if we drop out number five, which is the offset component. So can you talk a little bit about how that we could proceed with the offset component included and then be developing the details or looking at the current pipeline and trying to protect ourselves there so we're holding people accountable and we can face the community and say, look, we're asking you to do your part and we're holding up this standard to new people that would like to buy into the system as well.
So like I mentioned before, the retrofit program doesn't have specific requirements for what types of things are retrofitted. We could rely on our local development community. We have a bunch of smart people out there that are developers to come up with some creative ways to get these retrofit credits. That would be one option to carry us forward until we had probably a more explicit toolbox that would be developed through the public process in PWAB. That would be, you know, one approach that could be taken. If the council chooses not to impose a retrofit requirement, really we'll be relying on existing customers to continue the good job that they've been doing in conserving water, but realizing we're probably not going to get that many new WEUs in the next couple months. Like I said, if I could predict the future, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this room.
Or if you were, you'd be very expensive.
Yeah.
So to follow up on that, what would you recommend regarding the pipeline and the short-term period?
As far as pipeline, usually the default answer is if you have a complete application at the time of the imposition of the new regulations, that you are vested to the old way of doing things. So that's, we've done that in several cases.
With the adjustments, necessary adjustment of 1:1 to 1:2 as required for the retrofit, and that we ask staff to return with a draft set of guidelines that includes a stakeholder input component. That we update the process with a code revision to reflect the February data availability, and that we receive monthly updates on the scenario, on the water supply scenario, to keep us informed.
That's your motion. Do we have a second? I'll second that. So we have a motion by Noah, a second by Jamie. And, you know, for a discussion, I have some discussion items on that. I think you covered everything. Interesting to add the monthly update on that. We do need to have, this should come back to us, whether or not we make adjustments on this water report and water equivalent UC units. Should we not consider having this come back to us in its entirety in 60 days, or just review what PWAB is reviewing as far as the retrofit and the ordinance 13.2.080?
I guess regardless of what you do, the water situation in Morro Bay will change over the next year, and I think regular updates would be appropriate. I would hate, because of resources, bringing it back every meeting. If it's a fairly brief report monthly, doesn't seem too awfully bad, because there may not be changes from month to month, quite frankly. But I think we do need to keep this on the forefront. I guess it depends ultimately what happens with the motion about when it needs to come back, as far as, because there have to be some adjustment depending on what happens with the motion.
Just a point of clarification on the motion. I understood you to say a 1:2 ratio. Yeah, I think the recommendation was a 2:1 retrofit to.
Yes, thank you for catching that, and I would amend my motion to be a 2:1 as intended and recommended.
So I would second your amendment.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
We're leaving in 5, right?
We're leaving in 5.
And just to also suggest that I didn't say anything specific about the pipeline, but I think I personally am comfortable with using the established process there to determine the pipeline, be equitable on that.
Okay. Nancy?
I will be voting no, because I think this is still way too overreactive, and I think it needs to go back to PWAB and staff. I also have a problem, especially with our limited staff resources, in asking them to come back with this water report quite so often. So therefore, I will be voting no.
George?
I'd definitely be voting no, too.
Christine?
I think it's difficult. I think I'm very much on the fence, because I'm wondering, we don't have exactly how many numbers of, I mean, we don't really know exactly at this point how many technically complete applications we have and how many are close to being technically complete. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we've just daylighted this since Thursday's staff report. And I do, my concern with it this evening is if it's going to Public Works Advisory Board for, well, the question is this. Will the Public Works Advisory Board be able to give direction on options for retrofitting? But then you're telling me, Mr. Levick, that there really anything goes, and any creative person, I mean, I'm not teasing, but really it sounds like there's no menu at all. And
correct.
Okay. So are there going to be that many, I guess what I'm wondering is, are we going to put people under duress unnecessarily if we're just going to let this slide for another 1 month or a month and a half, when we're committed to some information we've received, knowing that it's not a great choice to be in this spot? So I'm really struggling with recommendation number 5 because of the timing portion. Will it ever change? Is it 2-to-1 always based on the Muni code? Is that what you're saying?
Unless we change the Muni code, and we're probably going to have to review ordinance number 266, which was a citizen initiative, and how specific that was to make sure that we don't, the growth management initiative. I don't believe that it got into that detail on the retrofit credits, but we'll at least need to touch base with that old citizen initiative that set the growth cap in Morro Bay.
So that makes it a little more complicated.
I think
to take it out or to leave it in?
I think that's to take out.
Well, if we take out recommendation number 5, are you saying that keeping the recommendation whole makes it more complicated for follow-up for staff?
No, I don't think it makes it. I don't think it changes it either way.
And was this in last year's report?
The retrofit?
Right.
No,
it was not.
That was not, because we were looking good as far as water resources went last year. We were in the second year of the drought, but the state was not looking at reducing state water allocations below what we'd accommodate with our drought buffer, so we were at 100% of our state water allocation.
Okay. All right, thanks for that. So that's where
okay.
I am.
All right, thanks. Thanks for that. I'll follow up as well. And I appreciate the dialogue and the points you make on number 5 and how, the timing issue is. And with that, I think, I'd be in favor of that, and I'd probably be voting no to the motion and reconsider a new motion to move forward on this.
Can I ask a quick question regarding, because I think your concern is the pipeline and the effects there, which that is something that I'm uncomfortable with as well. And I can imagine someone that has developed a plan and committed to a concept and put money on the table to implement that, and are somewhere in the process, are going to be crunched by this. We have an established process to try to establish a fair way to evaluate that. What if we were to postpone the decision on the pipeline and allow staff to come back with some discussion about who and where and analysis along those lines and make that decision then, but go forward with the motion as it stands, because it's not specific to the pipeline. We can take a little more time on that. My concern, and the reason I will be voting yes, or I will vote against anything that doesn't include number 5, is because the writing's on the wall. We know potentially the situation we're going to be in with the water supply. So I would love to have a scenario where we're able to go back and actually withdraw that, because we did receive the rain and we're going to get the state water that we're depending on. But that doesn't seem likely. And I'll just end by asking Mr. Livick, what would be the process? Say we do have a miracle march, we take the action that I've recommended in the motion, we have a miracle march or something along those lines that changes the scenario. How would we be able to react to that, to work backwards, and would we be able then to actually provide some relief here and not move forward with everything as we've discussed?
Well, I assume we'd bring back a resolution rescinding resolution 1414 that would adopt new WU allocations without the retrofit requirements.
And in a case where someone has actually paid money into that fund or program, they could also be refunded?
Well, there's no really in lieu. Nobody's paying any money to. They're going out in the community and finding retrofits that they can do and providing us with evidence that those have been done. So nobody's paying the city anything. They are performing those retrofits on their own.
So how, 2 months from now, we have a different scenario and we decide, hey, we need to, we can retract this or reduce the burden at this point, which doesn't seem likely. How would we be able to help the people in the pipeline that would be caught here paying into a program or committing to a program that's not necessarily that's been rescinded?
I think if somebody had already done the retrofit credits, they did those based on if five stays in there, they did those based on the regulations on the books at the time, and the city rescinds it, so it affects any new applications after that. I don't know how we undo what they've done.
Of item number five, and to come back in 60 days following PWAP review of the item number five, which has to do with our municipal code 1320.080 and retrofitting requirements. So I have a motion and a second by George. So Rob, can you help me out with that motion? Did that that capture the 60-day time period for us to come back, and it also addressed the item number five, which would bring back the staff report in 60 days for us to reconsider making any adjustments to our water equivalency units.
Just a point of clarification, this would be to adopt resolution 1414, but deleting paragraph B5.
Resolution 1414.
That was the staff recommendation, was to adopt resolution 1414, which is like pages 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6 in the item.
Correct.
But you would be deleting
paragraph
Section B5, which was the 2-for-1.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you. So we'd be deleting that in the resolution, but we would be bringing this back in
within
60 days.
That would be an additional requirement, yes.
Yes, and so we would be reviewing this in its entirety one more time.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? No? None that way?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-1. Thanks for the work on that. Okay. So we've eliminated our public hearing items, and we're moving on to new business. At this time, I'd like to, with consent from council, move item D3 forward to discuss that. We have a consensus on that. We have a yes to the right. Nancy, are we in agreement with that? D3 is our mid-year budget.
Yes. I would also wish you could entertain moving D2 and then putting D1 at the end.
Exactly.
We'll just move
D3 to the front, and we'll go on to D2, and then we'll take D1 last.
Okay.
We're going to take D1, which is our mid-year budget, and we're going to move that to the front of the new business items. We'll proceed to D2, which is our Vi-League site, and then D1 we will move to the end and review that at the end. Do I have concurrence with that? Okay, so it looks like we've got enough to concur on that. And with that, I'll take item D3.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. Before you tonight is the annual mid-year budget resolution, the Citizens Oversight Committee report presentation, the December 2013 investment portfolio, and the contract services payments through December 31, 2013. I would like to request that at this time the council allow the Citizens Oversight Committee to present their report and recommendations, and then allow me to present my report afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Citizens, Measure Q Committee. Thank you for your work and coming forward tonight.
My name is Homer Alexander. Thank you for moving us up on your agenda. We really appreciate it. Tonight, the Citizens Oversight Committee, or more commonly known as the Measure Q Committee, will present our annual report for the year ending June 30th. The committee met on December 12th and reviewed all the transactions in and out of the Measure Q Fund to determine if these transactions conform to what the voters were told when they approved the additional half-cent sales tax in 2006. We also identified transactions that did not conform. Actual revenue was over $900,000, which exceeded the amended budget by $78,000. The Measure Q expenses for the year were $1,850,000. As of June 30th, there was $750,000 remaining in the fund. The fire department funded a full-time firefighter and provided for vacation relief and overtime to maintain a fourth firefighter on each shift. They also purchased additional equipment for the new fire station. This committee spent a fair amount of time discussing the $70,000 budgeted in this
school resource officer at the high school. Now, our observations on that Measure Q, the spirit of the funding, says that it should not be used for things that are desired or required, as in a mandate, but rather desired, as in streets, the fire station, and its equipment. There was a carryover on a communications project of $34,000 that we'd like to have brought back and put in the budget for reallocation. And there's funding for this school resource officer, and we'd like to see that negotiated in the future so that the city and the school district share equally. I have a little expansion on that as a part of our review of the school resource officer. Just what is it? What does he do? What are the accomplishments? We visited with Chief Christie and also the principal Andrus at the high school. The primary goals of this resource officer program are preparedness and prevention. And around the country, there's incidents of school shootings that have compelled everyone to be prepared. Law enforcement has learned that rapid and decisive response is the best way to minimize loss of life. Our officer, Sam Rodriguez, has participated in an active shooter training program, and they've had local drills conducted in coordination with the Sheriff's Department. Also, there's been a change in the demographics at the high school over the last decade, and now the percentage of what they call socially disadvantaged, that's low-income families, has doubled to nearly half of the population. This change has been accompanied, as you might guess, with an increase in illegal activities, and so some of the accomplishments of our campus SRO included getting to know the students, vice versa, promotes trust and understanding. And a uniform presence discourages poor behavior. And the intelligence gathered from students has actually facilitated police apprehension regarding some of the other crimes in our city. Morro Bay, as I said, uses Measure Q funding to partner with the school district. And last year, we paid about two-thirds of the cost. That was a little over $56,000 we spent. So we would like to see that more on an equal basis in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the 3-minute clock on?
I think we're good to go.
Okay, good. I'll be quick.
I'm going to conclude with our specific recommendations and our general recommendations as well. Specifically on the fire department, we only had one recommendation, and that was to retire the second $300,000 USDA loan since the construction is complete. We discussed that very briefly last year. There were some maybe trailing invoices anticipated, so that's why it wasn't done then. But that's our specific recommendation for the fire department. For the storm drains, two recommendations. Number one, issue the RFP for the storm drain master plan. That's required anyways as input to the general plan, the coastal update that was thought about being or supposed to be done last year. It didn't get done for other higher priority projects. So that's just a general recommendation on that. Secondarily, the other $70,000 budgeted for the permit requirements, we are recommending that that be transferred to the general fund budget for the reason that it's a federally mandated expense. I'll get to that in a little more detail in the last slide. Street maintenance, good progress, continue good progress. Previous years, we had larger carryovers because this project took a little more time. So we're seeing very good progress there. I think the expenditures were about $1.2 million this year on the streets alone. So that's good that we finally have made some very good progress. And finally, general conclusions. Starting with the second bullet, the Measure Q revenues should not be used to fund personnel expenses in general. We believe that's the intent. There are some exceptions, as you can see. Obviously, the fire department, the 10th person that allows us to have four fire personnel on at any time, and the school resource officer as well. But in general, we would continue to recommend they not be used for personnel expenses. Also, the carryover funds. Typically, the carryover funds, if they're not spent because maybe there's a something gets brought in under budget, or you negotiate a better contract, or it doesn't get spent for priorities, we don't, as a committee, recommend that be hung out there in limbo forever. So that goes back to the general fund. We did discuss a limit on that because of the volatility in predicting the fire seasons and the required personnel, that we would put a one-year cap on safety, storm drain, street maintenance. If I or my colleagues, members, can answer any questions, we'll be glad to. Thank you.
Thank you for your report, and thanks for all your work.
Thank you.
Would you like to conclude the presentation, Ms. Slayton, and then we'll go for questions?
I would. Thank you. This report reflects a net use of money in the amount of $148,757. The request serves follows: a transfer of $416,000 from the Risk Management Fund to cover costs associated with employee separations and voluntary lowering of vacation banks. A revenue adjustment is requested by the Fire Department of $49,775 for money to be received from mutual aid and special events. This money is planned to be spent on overtime and safety equipment related to mutual aid. The Harbor Department is requesting a $125,000 transfer from its reserve fund to cover additional expenditures with the North T Pier as outlined in the staff report. The wastewater treatment plant is requesting $100,000 from the sewer reserve for costs related to the water reclamation facility relocation. The police department is requesting $42,011 of unallocated Measure Q for the mobile audiovisual equipment critical upgrades. General Fund Capital Projects is requesting funds for the Morro Creek Bridge project as follows: $50,000 from unallocated Measure Q for emergency vehicle access across the bridge, $25,000 from our LTF Bike Pathways Fund, and $24,500 from our LTF Transit Fund, both for lighting and unanticipated design and environmental costs. This money, the $24,500, will be taken from the reservation of transit LTF funds for the senior shuttle, or it could come from unallocated Measure Q. Lastly, Public Services is requesting $7,246 from our remaining PEG access funds for the Laserfish project. Staff is recommending that Council adopt Resolution 13-14, authorizing the budgeted amendments as revised at this meeting, and accept all of the Citizens Oversight Committee's recommendations, with the exception of the $70,000 transfer of Stormwater Phase 2 MS4 permit from Measure Q to the General Fund. This completes my report, and I'm available, as well as the department head team, to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ms. Layden. At this time, are there any questions for staff or the Measure Q committee? Advisory body? Nancy, you want to start off? Noah, have any questions?
Sure. I guess I'll shoot. I have some questions now. I guess I'd like to hear from the Measure Q committee. We are talking about a concept of putting restrictions on the funds based on state or federal or other governmental mandates, which I'd just like to hear a bit of a review about where your concern is in that. I think I understand, but also historically, is that something that you feel has been communicated clearly in part in the initiative, and whether you think that's something that you do think it's something that we should implement going backwards to the already adopted budget, but going forward, how would you expect us to actually formalize that sort of requirements or intent?
My name again is Homer Alexander. I'm the chair of the committee. I was on the original campaign committee in 2006, and the basic premise that we told the voters was that Measure Q's money would be used for things above and beyond the city's normal ability to pay for things. Because of that assumption, I've always used a simple test when I'm looking at an individual item. If Measure Q did not exist, would the city do the project anyway? And if the answer to that question was yes, then I don't think it's a Measure Q justifiable expense. Now, obviously, Measure Q is a general sales tax. The decision was made in the summer of 2006 to make it a general sales tax and not a specific tax because of the concern of reaching the two-thirds threshold. So you, as city council members, can spend the money any way you'd like. But I'm going back to the fall of 2006 when Chief Pond and Chief DeRohan went to every single meeting.
That is requiring us to do that, and therefore we're kind of backfilling the general fund in a roundabout way.
It's exactly what's happening. The general fund's being backfilled. 80% of the general fund are personnel costs. So in essence, you could come to the conclusion that you were paying administrative personnel costs. And the voters are pretty clear that that's not what they wanted.
Okay.
They wanted a new fire station.
Yeah, absolutely, and streets and reduce toxic runoff to the bay, which is why that would qualify outside of the mandate. So what I guess I'm trying to understand is I've never seen this explicitly lined out, that the concept of not funding a mandated program specifically stated in since I've been on the council as part of the intent or the restrictions that we should apply as we discuss Measure Q funding, and I guess I wonder why we didn't include that in our resolution just passed last year along those lines.
It's the first time it's ever come up, and quite frankly, it was just forgotten.
Well, that would lead to my last question then, because I do recall funding mandated programs and equipment and so forth. Specifically, there's a fair number that I'm aware of that came through the police department and the fire department that I would say would very much qualify under the mandate. So I feel like we've entered a gray area if we start to talk about a restriction to apply to our last budget. And that would lead kind of back to the part of my first question, which is going forward, how would you recommend we actually address this, which I think is a gray area?
with the exception of a very small expense for some exams the police department uses. I think last year they spent less than $500, which is something that, you know, probably should not have been allowed. It just slipped through because the dollar amounts were so small. This particular $70,000 is an Environmental Protection Agency mandate. If the city doesn't do it, it's going to be fined $3,000 a day, or I can't remember exactly what your staff report said in your budget, but a significant amount of money would add up over time. The city is not mandated to buy a new fire truck. The city is not mandated to repave the streets. The city is not mandated to have a school resource officer. I think that's the big difference between this particular item and all the other things that have been paid for over the last 6 years.
So just to close, going forward, how would you recommend we have this discussion, if you would provide some recommendations about how to be clear about the mandate component that's been introduced?
Well, I would suggest that you revisit item resolution 46-12 and just add a sentence. And, you know, I think also that, you know, your discussion and decision tonight is something that the city staff's going to remember. And I also have a feeling that probably in the future years, some of these issues that are, you know, routinely just passed through the budgeting process might get a little more scrutiny. Does that answer the questions?
Actually, yeah, I'd follow up with a couple questions on that as well. So I appreciate the questions on the mandate, and I appreciate your response and your clarification on some of those. As we go forward, if we and I know this is hypothetically speaking, but we're funding an SRO officer. So if we get a state mandate on a requirement for an SRO officer, then we fall into that, something that we've already always done, and now we're in the position to where are we going to pull that out of the general fund, or are we going to fund that with Measure Q, which we are Measure Q funds? Are we going to go ahead and proceed with what we've already been doing? So, you know, I guess going back to what Noah was saying, you know, we are meeting the intent per the resolution, and I think it's good to clarify that, you know, it is a general fund tax, and I think it's great that council went through and approved the resolution to be very specific on what the intent is. Now we're coming back and saying not only is the intent of those items, but it's the difference between what's a mandate and what's not. So this, I would expect, as things change, we would probably come back and look at that resolution and have other discussions on how it applies. But, you know, I guess my question goes back to, if we go back to an SRO officer and that becomes a state mandate, are we going to be having this conversation on, do we take a state mandate out of a resolution so we can fund that? We will be addressing that then.
That's correct. You probably would be addressing that
then.
But you were elected to address those things.
That's exactly right. Okay, that's
all
I have.
We're just an advisory board, that's all.
That's right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Nancy, any other questions?
Vehicle loans that we had in there. We did the SART exams for $3,000. We also had some safety equipment. We had ballistic entry vests. We had, that was the ballistic entry vests that were funded by Measure Q. That wasn't a mandate. We did do something that was probably not in the spirit of Measure Q, which was a maintenance contract. In 2012-13, we threw in $70,000 for the stormwater management plan. This was to do, it was an evaluation that was required for pathogen total daily maximum load, waste load allocation attainment plan, and reduce the level of pathogens. So that would have been, that I
believe would have been a mandate. Mr. Leivick can probably speak to that a little better than I can. We again did the SART exams for $4,000. And then in 13-14, we did, and that was apparatus, we did the $70,000 for the stormwater permit requirements that's under scrutiny right now, and then also $4,000 for SART exams. So we have done them in the past.
And what about for the communications? Wasn't there expenditures that based on communications, or in your opinion, that wouldn't?
That may not have been considered a state mandate, but it was a very critical thing that needed to be updated, and that was in the 2011-12 budget, where we did $65,000 for the radio tower and antenna cabling, and that was the same time that we did the $18,300 for a maintenance contract on the communications. Just the communications center budget. That justification for that one says, this year the communications center budget was hit with significant increase related to personnel costs, and asked that the $18,300 be transferred out of the general fund and into Measure Q. So we have done these kind of things before. I will tell you that I absolutely appreciate the Citizens Oversight Committee. They are very, very, a very careful group. They look very thoroughly at our expenditures, and they do their absolute level best to make sure that we are spending the money appropriately. One thing that Chairman Alexander said was that, or didn't say, but he alluded to it, he made a comment that the money is for items that are above and beyond the budget. This is a revenue source with no sunset. It's a revenue source with no restrictions. We have self-imposed restrictions on it based on what we sold to the community, how we were going to spend it. And in that regard, if we're spending it on stormwater to prevent toxic runoff into the bay, while it may be something that we have to do, it may be a permit that we have to get or an outreach program we have to do, I believe it fits, and I believe it fits for that reason, because everything we do stops toxic runoff going into the bay. It may be a paper plan. It may not actually be building a storm drain, but we're doing all the things we need to do. I don't think we're abusing it, but then that's my opinion, and I'll let you have that.
Thanks. Just my last question, I give you the chance, and I have my own opinion, but do you feel like the city over the years of Measure Q has done a good job of respecting the intent of the Measure Q and working with the committee?
Yes, I do, and I believe a lot of that has been driven by the committee, because they come to the meetings every year and they speak up and they present their recommendations. There have been times when they have praised staff for doing such a great job managing the money. And they've also brought forward things that we spent that weren't correct, and we fixed it. So, yes, I do think that we've been doing the right thing. I think we, as staff, have been very cautious about making sure that we do the right thing. When we accidentally had a situation where some salary was charged in there, and our payroll clerk saw it and came and asked me if this was okay, and I said, no, we reversed it. And that never went to the Measure Q committee. So we are being very careful about how we spend the money.
Nancy, any questions? George, any questions? Christine?
Just a quick one. So last year when we were doing our budget workshops, which is almost a year ago, this came in. I don't know, perhaps I probably need to ask for clarification. I know that Ms. Russell has just recently reread all of the documents relating to Measure Q. So the Citizens Oversight Committee is established to ensure the proper use of the Measure Q funds. So that's what they're charged with doing. And the structure of them doing that is, like today, it's kind of a hybrid. They've looked at the budget for fiscal year 2012-13 and made their recommendations and report. Then they're also taking a look at our midpoint, where we are with the budget 2014-13.
That's correct.
Excuse me, 13-14.
13-14.
So we don't get the benefit of the expertise from this committee until really the budget's already been done and adopted. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's one of the things. If you look at how the committee's structured, it is to review the fiscal year expenditures no later than 6 months after the end of the fiscal year. The other thing that they are supposed to do is have a semi-annual meeting to review the expenditures to date. I always try to combine the two events in December, usually the first week of December, so that they can look at both pieces. But nowhere in the structure of the committee is a provision for them to review the budget. But as citizens, they could come and participate in our budget workshops and talk about incorrect or correct spending.
Right, because certainly those five folks would have an unbelievable understanding that the average citizen doesn't have. And in some cases, they may say the average council member doesn't have. So there's nothing establishing that they cannot chime in during the budget setting process.
That's correct. They would be speaking as citizens, not as a committee.
Okay. All right. That was just clarifying that rule. Okay.
Thanks. I haven't officially opened up public comment, but I do have one more question for Mr. Alexander that was prompted through this discussion. Thanks for coming back and forth. Thanks. So getting back to the state mandate and kind of the explanation at, you know, usually it's a review, this is kind of a hybrid situation. So you alluded earlier that there may have been a previous time where there was $500, maybe a few hundred dollars that was maybe used inappropriately in your view that was for a state mandate. And, you know, I guess the question is that wasn't brought forward because it was just a few hundred dollars and, you know, it wasn't really that significant. So now we're looking at $70,000, and is that really what's driving this? Is because, you know, well, a few hundred dollars, you know, it was a state mandate. We're not going to raise any flags on this issue, you know, over a few hundred dollars. But now we're talking $70,000. Where are we going next? Is it going to be a couple hundred thousand dollars? Can you elaborate on that?
You've actually nailed it right on the head. That we look at every single transaction that passes through the Measure Q fund. You know, she gives us a report that's a couple hundred pages long. We miss a few things. And some of the things...
It doesn't seem like you miss much.
Well, but we do miss a few things. And some of the things that Mrs. Slayton mentioned earlier, we didn't really think they were mandated. We didn't think the state law or federal law required that be done. In last year's discussion, the city council, transferred $300,000 or $400,000 out of storm drains into streets because we recommended that you do that, and that in essence, storm drains and streets go together. You know, put new storm drains in and then tear them up because you put a street over it. The reason that the plan, that we didn't say anything about the stormwater management plan last year, was that Mr. Smuckler was absolutely correct when he commented that, hey, we can't put new storm drains in unless we have a plan where to put them. But the intention was is that's the architectural drawings, engineering drawings, for the plan for the storm drains, where the new storm drains have to go, which is a capital expense. We felt that was a very justifiable Measure Q expense.
Okay. Thanks for that explanation. So just for clarity, because I can understand your concern and your passion over, you know, is it a few hundred dollars here? Where are we going with this? I understand that. But the other thing that I want to reinforce is regardless of whether or not it's a state mandate, it is going toward one of the four items that were listed on the resolution. And I think that's even more important, because if it was not, then, you know, the flags definitely should be flying for anybody who'd like to speak to it. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. Thanks. So any other, you know, Nancy, do you want to start off with discussion then?
Certainly. First, let me just read something to you quickly. The City of Morro Bay is dedicated to the preservation and enhancement of the quality of life. The city shall be committed to this purpose and will provide a level of municipal service and safety consistent with and responsive to the needs of the public. That says to me that the city has a responsibility through the general fund to provide for these things that we need, including state and federal mandates. I've received probably more emails on this subject than on almost anything else in a while, and all of them say to me the same thing. The public was told that the monies from the Measure Q funds would be used specifically to enhance above and beyond the, what the city's already supposed to do. Now, if the city's supposed to provide this mandated report, then that's what needs to happen. And I do have a question as part of this for Mr. Livick. The next question, of course, comes up as to where does the $70,000 come from if we don't take it from Measure Q. And I just want to ask you about page 15 of page 67, which is monies for public works, and item 6105 is consulting services, which are budgeted at $90,000. Transactions so far are a total of $14,274. So could the $70,000 for this mandated program come out of this funding? That's a big chunk of money. I know I'll let you have time. Those things are hard to, that's why I asked for some of this stuff in paper, because by the time you scroll back and forth, I'm sorry about that. 15 of 67.
It might be easier to say what number in the PDF. Is it page 1? Oh, you got it? All right.
Are you talking about account 6105?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to know more about that and why it's $90,000. We haven't spent $90,000, and could $70,000 of that be reallocated to paying for this mandated project? I'm sorry.
Without the budget notes in that next column over, that gave the justification to how we came up with $90,000 in that account.
And I don't have that either. I'm sorry.
Of course, we will absorb that into our budget, because we're not going to be paying $3,000 a day, $3,500 a day in fines. And that line item, staff made that request to Measure Q. We looked at the resolution preventing toxic runoff to the bay. That seemed to meet the resolution that was required. The mandated program, that's kind of new this year. If council's direction is not to put any more mandated programs into Measure Q, of course we will do that. But our direction was, we brought forward a budget to City Council with this as a Measure Q item. Council approved that. We expected to spend it in that way.
Well, and as Mr. Alexander said earlier, sometimes we miss things, even council members. I just have a real problem with using Measure Q funds at any time to pay for mandated programs. And I have some other questions on the budget, but I'll save those for later.
Unfunded mandates. So it's something that I think, as our staff know, it's something that is becoming far too common, that is filtering down to the level of local government. So certainly local government doesn't necessarily like to be told what to do all of the time by imposing mandates that we can't meet financially, and that there's no funding that comes along with the mandate in many cases as well. So I agree that that is an absolute frustration with the government process at this point, and especially if something comes as far away as Washington, D.C., then it just seems like a burden, and I would agree that it does. For this recommendation that the Measure Q committee has made for the fiscal year 13-14, for me, I feel that when I look at the resolution, well, when I look at the measure itself from that was voted in by the voters, clearly storm drains is mentioned. And then when you go to the resolution that was brought about in 2012, it's mentioned again specifically storm drain maintenance and prevention of toxic runoff into the bay, when there were many things actually in the resolution itself that were not emphasized through the resolution. So there's obviously choices made by this particular council that these were the four most critical areas. So I understand the mandate issue, and I think we need to be very aware of the mandate concern moving forward into budget year 14-15, which we're going to be taking up any minute. I feel as though for this year, that information wasn't presented. Let's say, for example, last year at this Measure Q report time, we didn't hear that. That wasn't something that was presented to the community. It wasn't presented to the council. And I don't believe it was presented to the staff. So in a way, it was kind of we were unaware. And so we're a little bit caught like, oh, wow, okay. Even though it meets the requirements of the ballot measure, and even though it meets the requirements of the Resolution 4612, we're hearing tonight from our trusted Measure Q committee that you still don't want us to do it for this year. So that's a challenge for me, because I feel as though we can meet that recommendation moving forward. It's just a lot harder for us to backfill to meet that recommendation from your committee tonight or for this fiscal year. And then the other question I have is, do you really want us going into then the general fund and kind of digging through? Because I kind of did that a little bit, like flipping through and saying, oh, okay, well, maybe, like Nancy mentioned, budget line 6105, and there were a couple other ones I found too. I thought, well, would that be something, let's say, that Ms. Slayton would have considered a Measure Q expense, but she knew she already had the Measure Q money kind of earmarked, so that one went into the general fund, even though perhaps it could have been Measure Q, but there's only so much in the Measure Q pot. So if, like, for example, line item 5130 is advanced life support, so that sounds for, I believe, fire department. So that's extremely important, and that meets everything that we've been told that Measure Q must meet, but that's in general fund. And maybe that was just a decision that was made during budgeting time to keep that there and move something over here. So I'm not sure, and maybe Ms. Slayton can respond. Do we really want to be digging into then general fund and looking to find a replacement for the 70? And then if we do, what happens to the 70? And just kind of talk me through that a little bit to see what do we want to do in this case for this year.
Thank you, Councilmember Johnson. One of the major issues that the Measure Q committee has had all along is not to supplant the general fund. This is supposed to supplement. So our budgets that we have in place, they feel should remain in place. Whatever we were paying for in 2006 in the general fund should stay where it is. And that anything else on top of that would come and be paid for out of Measure Q if it was something special. Mandates change, and a lot of times we get mandates that are handed down to us frequently. We have a consultant who handles our state mandated costs. And she comes out and says, well, we've got three new mandates, and two of them are in the police department. These are things that we don't know about. It's not that we're trying to avoid, we're not trying to take something out of the general fund and put it into Measure Q. This is something that came down the line. We don't have the money for it. We would have had to have gone to reserves for it, and we didn't. We felt that it was an appropriate use. If we were to go into the general fund right now, which back in June I presented a balanced budget, if we go into it now, and we're going to say that we're going to take $70,000 out of it.
And what I'm seeing is a need to have a deeper discussion about the Measure Q funds and mandates. And I'm willing to have that discussion. I really think there's some serious consequences potentially with adopting that sort of restriction. And we need to be careful about that. I understand that a resolution could be passed and, you know, a future council could change that, but that's a public process and it should be. So my feeling would be, going forward, we should have the conversation about mandates and Measure Q and recognize how many different ways that could hamper our budgeting, particularly recognizing how frequently new mandates come about that require us to do things that we've always done or should do. And my feeling is right now we're kind of in a catch-22 and a very much a gray area. So thinking about this year, I'm hesitant to reach into our adopted budget that we went through a public process to approve and scramble it to address this. I think it's very important that we stand by the Measure Q intent, and I stand by my vote for that last resolution in 2012 about what Measure Q is meant to be accomplish. And I think that's what guides me when making the decision about, for example, this Phase 2 stormwater program. When you look at it, its result will be directly, and Mr. Alexander agrees, a reduction in toxic runoff to the bay, which is one of our four premier calls of the Measure Q funds and our litmus test of what we should be spending these funds on. So my feeling is, let's commit to having that larger discussion and actually get some recommendations from the committee as well as our finance department about what how we could frame a mandate component going forward, because it's an important thing to be on the guard for, and yet continue with the recommendations from staff, knowing that it fulfills, we're not bending any of the foundational requirements or commitments that the community has been told we would uphold. That's my feeling for that one item, and then there's just a couple other smaller items on the overall discussion.
Okay, great. Nancy?
Are we still... I wasn't going to bring up the other budget items, and then I've decided I will. So I don't know if this is the appropriate time or if we should finish this discussion first.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm looking at expenditure amendments in the staff report, and I notice an absolutely huge one that I think needs to be pointed out to the same people in our community who voted for Measure Q and had an understanding about how it would be used. If you look at the one, two, third item down under expenditure amendments, we're moving $416,000 from our risk management fund to the general fund to pay for legal fees that I think a lot of our citizens honestly believe were not necessary. And I think you combine that with what you're doing now with $700,000. $70,000. That could have come out of that chunk. I think we're going to have some very unhappy people. And I just two last comments, and then I'm through. There's a big difference, I think, between storm drain maintenance and a federally mandated storm water permit. Those are two very, very different things. And just because it's legal to do this, based on our interim city attorney's opinion, that does not make it moral or ethical for the citizens of Morro Bay. So if you choose to take the $70,000 out and use it this way, I will be forced to vote against it, the whole budget process.
Okay, thanks for that. You bring up some good points, though. Ms. Slayton, as far as coming out of the reserve, the risk management reserve fund, that's an open fund as well. I mean, if we were to draw from reserve, we could do the general fund reserve or the risk management reserve if that was necessary. If we were really in a pinch and we had nowhere to go and we weren't debating over Measure Q funds, that is an option. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Sure. Just a second. So I think what we're still discussing, though, is that our Measure Q committee is bringing forward. But, you know, I wonder if that's really creating, you know, other restrictions that we're still meeting the intent by addressing those four items that are on the resolution. It's just a matter of whether or not how far we're going with that mandate. Is it 70,000 this year? Is it 200 next year? And I, you know, I get that. But, you know, I think what you're asking for is to, you know, make a hard line on this 70,000 tonight. That's what I'm getting out of this. So we, you know, for me, you know, I'm hesitant on the mandate and applying that restriction. You know, I feel that we are meeting the intent of the resolution, but I sympathize with that. Where do we go next? I think you raise a good issue, and you know, is 70 acceptable this year, but not next year, or 72 is not acceptable this year. So, I think there's probably other alternatives we can. I wouldn't want to go into our general fund reserve at all. The risk management reserve is an area where, you know, it's got some flexibility for us, but. Even then, you know, I think we've, you know, we need to address, you know, head on whether or not the mandate is something we need to address tonight for the 70,000, or forego the 70,000 the way it's being funded and come back and revisit a mandate in the resolution of the Measure Q. And that's where I'm up for discussion on that. And then we should be mindful. We should wrap this up.
Okay, I'll wrap my comments up on this item by looking directly again at Resolution 4612, which I voted for, was passed just in 2012, that is very clear about the intent of Measure Q and is the most recent effort to clarify what Measure Q is meant to do and accomplish for the community. And it lays out very specifically four items: improve the fire department, enhance public safety, street maintenance, storm drain maintenance, and prevention of toxic runoff into the bay. Those are our marching orders. And it doesn't say anything about funding personnel decisions, which we have done with Measure Q's blessing or the committee's blessing. So my feeling is this resolution needs to be addressed if we're going to start talking about mandates, because it doesn't say a word about mandates in the resolution. So at this point, I'm not willing to scramble our adopted budget, which went through the public process. I would be if we had identified that we had funded something that didn't fit in that very strict range of options.
Absolutely.
But we haven't. So I feel like we're doing our responsibility to respect the Measure Q funds. And I also do think that there's been an issue raised that we need to discuss and work with the Measure Q committee and our finance department, as I said, to evaluate how to effectively address the mandate option, which needs to come forward as we enter our new budget cycle, not working backwards. This is a new problem that's been identified to us. So My feeling would be, and I'm in support of going forward tonight as approved, because it does respect the intent of Measure Q in these four items in the resolution, and then commit to having a larger discussion about perhaps revisiting the resolution and having the discussion about the mandate side. So maybe we should close that part of the discussion and then...
Sounded like a motion to me.
Well, I do have a couple of other items in the agenda or in the budget. So if you don't mind, should I just talk about those
sure.
now? And then, okay. So one other small item was we had the LTF funds that were earmarked for the senior limo project, mm-hmm. which you know has had its challenges getting off the ground. But I want to report that there have been some really exciting recent pieces of information and community groups that want to be involved with the project. So my request would be that we retain that $24,500 fund for the senior limo, that we don't spend those funds. And I think that this would, as suggested by staff, Measure Q could pay for that. This is basically to address the emergency vehicle access across the Morrow Creek Bridge. We were trying to find ways to cover the remaining gap in funds for that project. And my feeling...
To this, what are we calling it here? Senior shuttle. So I wouldn't want to see that fall by the wayside. Thanks.
Yeah, and so my last comment would be just in response to Nancy's comments about the risk management expenditures, and you failed to mention that also is in part to pay down our vacation accrual caps, which is something that the grand juries informed us that we need to do, and that is an unfunded liability that we need to address. So through our negotiations, that 400 some odd thousand is also paying off that burden as well. So just a clarification on the entirety of that fund. So with that, I would be ready for a motion.
Okay.
If you're ready, okay.
Sure.
I move that we adopt Resolution 13-14, authorizing the budget amendments as revised at this meeting, and accept all of the Citizen Oversight Committee's recommendations with the exception of the $70,000 transfer of stormwater phase 2 MS4 permit from Measure Q to the general fund, and that we add the final payment of the Morrow Creek Bridge of $24,500 to the unallocated Measure Q fund payment as well.
Okay, we have a motion by Noah. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Christine. Any more discussion? Seeing none to my right, any more to my left? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries 3-2. Okay, thank you for that. We'll move on to item D2, and this item is the approval of the consent of landowner agreement for lease site 87, 88, and 87W and 88W at 833 Embarcadero. This is the off-the-hook Violet League site, and this time do we have to...
No, on this item, I have to excuse myself because this involves my sister. And,
okay. Okay, all right. Okay, yeah. At this time, yeah. All right, thanks, George. So just for clarification, George is recusing himself on this next item, and we'll be leaving the meeting for the night, which only leaves us with one more item on the agenda. Thanks, George. Okay, item D2. Mr. Endersby.
Ready? Thank you, Mayor and Council. Good evening. So tonight we have owner of lease site 8788 and 8788 W B&L Flash Violet League. I'm proposing a lease site redevelopment project as outlined in the staff report and the attachments. Per council policy, we're seeking council and public review of this proposal and approval of a consent to landowner agreement before Ms. League submits her project for planning review and development. If approved tonight, planning will process the project concurrent with the Harbor Department beginning to renegotiate a new master lease agreement with the tenants there. This is the second round we've had at this lease site proposal. As you know, earlier or mid last year, Ms. League and Bert Caldwell, the lease site, neighboring lease site to the south, proposed a joint project that came before you folks, and they were redirected to come back and propose separate projects. Mr. Caldwell went earlier this year, or late last year, and then Ms. League has come back with her proposal. So I hope you've had good time to review the staff report. I gave you full-size copies of the proposal earlier in the week, so you'd have the big stuff. We get up on the screen here for the viewing folks as well, so it'll be a little more clear. And that's my staff report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Keep it moving.
Thanks for the slide presentation. I've got to put a plug in for that. Thanks to the staff report. Any questions for staff at this time? I'll turn it over to the agent for their presentation. Seeing none, Kathy?
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. My name is Kathy Novak from Novak Consulting, and I'm here this evening representing Ms. Violet League for her project at 833 Embarcadero, also known as Off the Hook. Staff has provided several details in the report. However, I'd like to take just a few minutes of your time to go over some specifics. At your council meeting in June last year, you asked that Ms. League and Mr. Caldwell submit separate projects that would retain individual ownership and character for these lease sites. You have already received one of the proposals, and now we're here for the second one. Ms. League, approximately 1,400 square feet. This reduction is the square footage will allow enough space for two ADA public restrooms and a small office to be constructed on the first floor. The proposed building on the north side of the lease site depicts two retail units at 868 and 874 square feet. This will bring a total of three retail units and one restaurant to this site. As for the western side of the site, there's an existing outdoor dining area that will be relocated to the northern courtyard, and this area will be transformed into the Harbor Walk. Currently, the Harbor Walk joins the Boatyard Complex on the north, but it does not have a southern connection. However, the project as proposed will construct a new 8-foot-wide boardwalk on the bay side of the building. To incorporate the new walkway and the existing building footprint will be reduced to approximately 7 feet, and the additional 1 foot will be made up along the western side. The plans as currently shown do not have a connection to the Libertine Pub walkway. However, once the council has taken action on this project, we will be in a position to work with Mr. Caldwell to design a link. Lastly, there is an existing side tie dock that will remain. The dock will be the same size but just relocated north a couple of feet to have it within the lease site boundaries and also to accommodate the relocated gangway. In summary, this proposal will open up views of Morro Rock by removing the existing second story. It will provide an 8-foot-wide sidewalk, a new harbor walk, public restrooms, and new retail units. In closing, I'd like to add that the design as proposed meets the city's waterfront design guidelines, the zoning ordinance, and the LCP with respect to height, view corridors, setbacks, and lot coverage, and more. It also provides significant public benefits and will provide visitor-serving uses to the waterfront. Ms. League is prepared to submit this project to the city, so she is respectfully requesting that the council authorize staff to sign the consent of landowner form so she can begin this process. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kathy. With that, I'll look to council for any questions to the applicant. And if there are none, I'll open up for public comment. Okay, I'll open up for public comment. Anybody who would like to speak to this item may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. Would you like to start off with some questions? Discussion.
Sorry, just working on map management. Thank you very much for the project, and thanks for listening to what we talked about a couple months ago. I really appreciate seeing, I know I, for one, think it's pretty exciting to take a second story off. I know it's difficult to kind of rent and manage it anyway, so perhaps it's a purely business decision, but I think that it is nice to open up the view corridor and to have that additional open space for everyone to enjoy. So I, of course, I look forward to that. I also drove down to the area today because I wanted to get a good look at that children's area. That is a true gathering point, and there are a few little toy rides now, and there's that cute area where you can put your heads in the wooden cutout, not really sure what to call it, but it is a magnet. And I am a parent of an 8-year-old, so for years we've been going there and hanging out. And we meet people there and gather there, and people do it naturally. I see tourists doing it all the time as well. I would love to see a focused children's area there moving forward. That's one thing that you do have it on the plan, so I'd really like to see it enhanced because, you know, now, of course, there are those portable plug-in rides, but what could we do down there? Because really, there aren't many spaces for kids outside to do. So there might be some really fun, creative design ideas for children right there. So I just know that if it were me and I was the person having the lease site, I would already have recognized that is a gathering spot. And I'm sure people walk into the retail there because they're hanging out there anyway, or they choose, let's just eat here because the kids are sort of happy and, you know, it's been a good experience. So I would like to see that in here, that children's focus be a part of that project in that courtyard. And it sounds to me like the courtyard will maintain that and add to outdoor space. So that would be great for me. And of course, I'm sure we'll see the bike parking and the public seating, all of that come back as it gets more refined. What I did notice today when I was there, and you have it on your drawing, there's that large, huge electrical box kind of right in the middle of that kid space. But it looks like by adding structure there, that will no longer be in the mix, so that would be nice. And then the only question I have is, at this point, is it seems like we're shrinking the restaurant space, but we're adding more retail. So this is just kind of a general question, maybe even to council. It seems as though, again, just having been there a few hours ago, there's a lot of retail that's not utilized as retail. You know, we're not.
And knowing where that second story has put projects in the past. So this is a huge bonus for the applicant going forward, and hopefully that will translate into a fairly easy process for him. I think your comments about the family are spot on, because I've noticed, too, that's really popular. And I think as we get more detail and you advance in your planning and so forth, and we understand more about what's going on to the south, you can probably really identify just how the best structure of that play area and the flow and so forth would be put together. So I trust you'll be doing that. As far as the question that you posed about retail versus restaurant, I think you have a good point, but I also think that diversity is a really important component for the Embarcadero. And my thought would be, with this design, you have three really high-profile retail spaces anchored by that restaurant space right on the water. So I actually really appreciate that, and would hope that with the redesign and, you know, making it much more of an inviting space in that corridor in the middle, we're looking at a site that would have a strong retail component that is viable. So my feeling would be, wow, let's continue on this track. If you think it's going to work, then I'm all for it. So those are my comments, and just appreciate the time you put into developing the proposal.
All right, thanks for that. Just want another shout out to staff and preparing the overheads for us, Eric. So thanks very much for that, and Kathy for your presentation. Couple things that come to mind on this. It seems like, you know, we're getting a lot of comments on the retail versus restaurant. And it's notable for me that the restaurant space is only 1,400 square feet, and you know, kitchen has to fit in there. Doesn't leave you much room. I know this is just conceptual stuff, just making my comments, but I'm also aware that, you know, the boardwalk is 8 feet, and there's doors going out there. I guess my thought is, that boardwalk, we struggle with that on, in other locations on the for the harbor walk, and that is maintaining, you know, a clear 8-foot walkway. So I wouldn't be in favor of opening that up for seating, and maybe that's, you know, a thought for this project as it moves forward is, you know, evaluating whether or not that restaurant space is adequate for the whole purpose. And, you know, obviously there's 1,200 square feet in the retail space on the front, so there's room for adjustment to make for an adequate kitchen and then seating and everything. But those are, you know, just brief comments. But I would want to ensure that we reserve that 8-foot harbor walk for a harbor walk and not get into, you know, crowding it with seating. And having said that, I'd like to see this project without creating too much complications. You know, one thing that does create a problem with council and other projects as they come forward is we have two neighboring projects, and you know, originally this was brought together, and you know, then it was said, hey, let's just do two separate projects. But I think it'd be beneficial if we could see these two separate projects move along at the same time, so we can make sure that this connection with the Harbor Walk and your neighbor are successful. You know, we don't get to a point where, and I'm sure you're aware of that, frequently we get, you know, two projects competing, and it slows things down eventually. So maybe we can just align these two projects moving together, you know, at the same time, and that way we won't have any kind of difficulties as we're trying to line up the Harbor Walk and things like that. So that would be my suggestion, and hoping that we can do that and make sure these two projects meet up. And those are the only questions, the comments that I have. Any other?
Maybe we should ask staff to comment on that. What I wouldn't want to do is, I think that's a good intent.
It is.
I do have that concern because we do want this to flow nicely between the two. But at the same time, you know, realistically, each project is being carried by a different applicant with, you know, different needs and so forth. So, Eric, if you wanted to comment a little bit on how you know, throughout this process we could ensure that they actually work together in the end.
I think we can certainly address it as the process moves forward. You know, unlike Held and VLA, where they had mirror image projects, and they even got off step a little bit when they started into construction at the same time just because they had different contractors and whatnot. But we can certainly work with Mrs. Novak. I mean, they're same agent on both projects, as you say. I mean, we've got to be sensitive to their needs and their financing and everything they're trying to do.
Sure.
And not hang up one for the other. But the timing's right. You know, we took Bert Caldwell not that long ago, so we're not way far ahead on him, so we can certainly be cognizant of that and try and keep him in step as much as possible.
Just to follow up,
we're going through the Planning Commission. The city always writes a condition of approval in there that says that they have to make the connection to the adjacent lease site. So whoever comes first, that's the second one, has to make the connection to the first one. So that's usually covered that way. And then just for your information about the restaurant and the retail unit, the reason why we designed the front retail unit at 1,200 square feet was because the existing tenant there now really needs the space. So we were looking at accommodating that existing tenant there. We've also talked as far as restaurants go. Restaurants have a breaking point of being either too big or too small. But if we design one about 1,400 square feet, we know that that would be one that we could accommodate with just a small kitchen, maybe something of more of an open air. The way that the restaurant is designed now, there's a lot of wasted space. So we've got a large restaurant with wasted space, where we're going to be looking at making something that would be better useful in the future. So hopefully that would help.
Sure.
Understand.
Thanks for clarifying it. Just, you know, some observation comments.
Sure.
You know, just
great.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments on, you know, the alignment. You know, I understand as we refine these things, but I, you know, just wanted to convey the opportunity to, you know, it sure does help to be able to meet sooner rather than trying to find out who landed first and now the second one has to catch up. Any other comments, Nancy?
I just have a couple. I can certainly understand the interest in having both projects move along together, but I'd hate to see anybody have to hold up their project waiting for the other. So please Mr. Andrews, let's see if we can prevent that from happening, and I'm sure you will. Just a comment about the restaurant and the retail space that happens to be one of my favorite restaurants in town, so I hope it doesn't get too small. We've got the best sushi chef around. Also, the retail, having spent a great deal of time in that little store with my granddaughter, who tends to call it the fairy store, I can see how that could easily be broken up into two retail spots. If you've ever done any shopping in there, it's very, very crowded, and there's plenty of merchandise to fill two stores, so I don't see a problem with the retail space down there. Those are just my comments.
Thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Move approval.
Ready for a motion?
I could, yeah. I would move approval of consent of landowner agreement. I can read that whole entire thing. Would you like me to? Is it necessary? Or just move approval of alternative A?
As stated.
As stated.
We have a motion by Christine. A second. We have a second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, thanks for that. Thanks, Kathy. All right, moving on to item D1. And not to put the pressure on you, but hopefully we can get through this one quickly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I think I was told there was going to be an hour for this item. I'm glad we could adjust that. Good evening. This report is to initiate some discussion on the operational hours for the restroom located at 1196 Front Street. I'll refer to it as Front Street Restroom. It's a single-user restroom unisex facility located at the north end of Front Street parking lot. It's at the base of the Surf Street staircase. It's also a lateral access, a coastal access for pedestrians. The facility currently is scheduled for public use during Memorial Day through Memorial Day through Labor Day. For instance, during the inaugural service during 2013, the facility operated, the operations were normal. Staff's service was routine. We did have one incident of graffiti. It was significant. We had to shut down the restroom. Took a lot of man hours to remove and repaint. And the very next evening was graffitied again. And so we had to close it back down. We repainted that, and we have since purchased some anti-graffiti coating, and we'll be applying that in the next few days. So currently the restroom is closed. To the north of the restroom, the next public restroom to the north is at the North T Pier, and the next restroom south is at Centennial Parkway. Other restrooms located along the waterfront include Coleman Park, The Rock, and also the one further south at Tylands Park. All these restrooms along the Embarcadero are open to the public daily and year-round. Each restroom has unique amenities providing various levels of service to the public. If the Front Street restroom is to remain open to the public year-round, additional city resources would need to be allocated to maintain a sustainable budget. Those allocations would be delivered as alternatives, as you've seen in your, this happened to be a little bit off-season. Generally, it's in the summer. We have a little, few more visitors who aren't accustomed to clear walls that need to have a little graffiti on them, so they go out for that. But we respond within 24 hours best we can to eliminate it. So
I'm
I think
sure
this
you
is
do
an isolated case. Is what
I'm
I think.
Sure you do a wonderful job of working on that. In relation to that restroom and maybe the others, are they locked at night, all of them or any of them?
No, our restrooms aren't physically locked. We were doing some locking in conjunction with the harbor staff down at Tylands restroom because of the vandalism that was occurring at the coin op showers. But since we've taken extra measures, it's ceased. We generally don't lock the restrooms. We've, throughout the years, tried to lock them at dusk and reopen them at dawn. And it seems like we have created more of a nuisance to the public who have done negative things to the restrooms in result of them being closed. So we found that we've been more productive leaving them open, even though park restrooms are closed at dusk, but they're not physically locked.
Thank you very much. You've been a big help.
Noah, any questions?
Yes, just one clarification. If we decide to go for alternative three, which is year-round service, that would be initiated with the new budget cycle or with the beginning of summer. So your interpretation of that is not that we would start that service tomorrow, but that we would start it with the new budget cycle, or which way were you thinking on that?
You certainly have that option. My recommendation would be to reopen the restroom as soon as we can and leave it open year-round. The expectation for the public is that you have a public restroom there. And they're going to, maybe they don't use the restroom daily, maybe not even weekly, but when they do, the expectation is going to be open. A few business owners in the area have mentioned that when we did close it for maintenance, there was a negative impact from the public, and there was some unlawful things that may or may not have occurred. I believe that if the expectation is there to the public that you're going to have a public restroom, then it should be open as much as we can keep it open. As far as the budget goes, we would insert these in our zero-based budget as the process unfolds here in the next month or two. As far as the remaining of this fiscal year, we would look at our budget. We didn't ask for any adjustments mid-year. We feel we're online. We probably could come up with some adjustments in our schedule and reallocate some our resources to ensure that this restroom is open for the remaining of this fiscal year. If
Thank
council
you.
Chooses.
Thanks, Noah. Christine, nothing? At this time, I'll open up public comment. Anybody would like to speak to this item? Thank you for sticking around as long as you have, and welcome. Please state your name. You have 3 minutes.
My name is Rick Young. I'm a resident and a homeowner in Morro Bay. For the last 12 years, I've been involved with a group of people who get together on Saturday mornings and share information and stuff on classic, antique, and custom cars, and we have been meeting in a couple of parking lots around the city. Twice now the group has had to move. We're totally informal, so there's no structure to it at all, but twice we've had to move because of complaints of business owners that we were affecting their customers and or their ability to carry on their business. The last place that we ended up is there in that area where this restroom we're talking about is located, just off the submarine and the Coast Guard vessel. And it's been quite convenient to collect there because we're about as far out of the way from local businesses as we can be and still have adequate place for people to park. Typically, there'll be a half a dozen cars, 10 or 12 people. On a good day, we might get 20 to 30 cars. A lot of times, people show up with their family, their wives and children, sometimes grandchildren. And so having a place for a restroom use is quite convenient. As was noted, the closest ones are up by the Coast Guard station, which if you've got children, that's through some underbrush along the face of the power plant or across the street, front street, and through a parking lot where there is no designated sidewalks. So having that restroom open there, particularly on Saturdays, between 8 and 11 when we normally collect, is really convenient for us. So I would recommend that if no other convenience can be made, at least for that period of time, we'd like to have it open for those of us that collect there and enjoy our sport. And for those that bring family, it's a real convenience. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rick.
And in my house over here, I have internet surveillance. And so that might be a good solution to keep the public and or the bad people from recognizing that maybe even a dummy camera and a sign might be good effective. I mean, that's least the cost of effective, but the real thing, obviously, is. So I was going to make that suggestion, and that's it. Thank you.
Excuse me, sir. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Okay, my name is Les, and my her name's Larry Deedon.
Okay,
and
thank
we're
you.
Located at 3044 Ironwood.
Thanks for sticking around and coming forward and talking with us. Thank you. Okay, with that, seeing no more public comment, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And I'll look to my left for discussion points.
Thank you, and thanks a lot for bringing your cars here. I'm sure you buy coffee and eat lunch and breakfast, so I'm sure it's not just using the restroom that you're contributing to here, so thank you. Honestly, it sounds to me like Mr. Woods can find a way to keep it open. I think it's really hard to have it open and then restrict it. So it sends a message I don't think we want to send when we're really bending over backwards to provide public restrooms in areas we don't have them. So if Mr. Woods, you can find it in your budget to keep this open, to open it, you know, immediately or whenever it is possible for you to open, and then moving into the next budget cycle, you'll remind us that this will be an additional expense for us. Yes?
I certainly will. We'll have that. It's not a huge amount, but it'll be added to our sustainable budget as we move forward in the process, definitely. Okay. In two areas, it will be part-time staff and supplies.
Okay.
Those are the areas I'll be concentrating on.
Okay, so that would be all from me. Thanks.
Nancy?
Thank you for sitting out there in those horribly uncomfortable chairs. We really appreciate your coming. I especially... I've been known to hang out with some of you people on Saturday morning. That's kind of my walking path. I walk down the hill and through the crowd of cars, and my husband usually stays there while I continue on down the harbor walk, but I've used that restroom many times. Also, not only do the car people use it and have they contacted me about it, but a lot of people who walk, and walking is a very, very important activity for a lot of folks in Morro Bay. They like the fact that it's at the bottom of the stairs, they like the location, and they really like the fact that it's cleaner and more modern than some of the other restrooms we have along the way. So I would say keep it open starting tomorrow morning or tonight. I'll be down.
Noah?
Yeah, thanks. I agree. I think, too, recognizing how much traffic the Maritime kiosk for the Maritime Museum and the plans there, it's an area that's up and coming as far as activity and traffic. So I think it's something that we can afford that approximately $8,000 in the budget for the entire year.
Thanks. And I'd, too, like to shout out a thank to Rick for... being so persistent on getting that bathroom open and your persistence earlier in the year and everything. So thanks for that and for you folks for coming out tonight. It seems we're pretty much in agreement in keeping this open and moving forward with that and the extra service that it provides for, you know, all that have been stated here tonight. So I think we're ready to move on this. I would move that staff recommendation that for alternative three, and we keep the restroom open immediately.
Second.
Second motion by Jamie, and second by Nancy. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Councilmember League is absent. And with that, that'll conclude our staff reports for tonight. Thank you for that. And we'll move on to council declaration of future agenda items. And I'll start off with a couple. The first one is a city manager. Thank you, guys. City manager recruitment and a report and recommendation by our interim city manager. And would like to get support on that. We have yes on that, so we have support for city manager recruitment by our interim city manager, and that would be a report and recommendation. And the other one I have would be the Chamber of Commerce, and then to bring back the economic development program and contract for council to discuss the future of that contract and the program with the Chamber. The economic development program with the chamber.
So that would include the current contract and any future proposal.
That would.
And that would be specific to the unfunded mandates that we discussed tonight, with some input from the Measure Q Oversight Committee.
I'd support that.
Great. And then just to check in with Mr. Lavick, as far as like the updates to the retrofit and the incentive programs, plumbing code stuff, that's all you already have clear direction on that. We don't need to do anything. Okay, great.
Anything else?
I have one request that came in about 20 minutes before our meeting this evening. It was from the Joan Solu about the 50th anniversary or 50th Morro Bay 50th committee wanting to she's requesting a future agenda item for a presentation of financials and the programs, but I don't know if that's if we could do that as a presentation, but I wanted to recognize that she's requested that.
Thank you. And we almost got that presentation today from Nancy.
But do you want to do retroactive?
But
on
we
that?
Can't.
We'd love to hear from
Joe. Then we can schedule that for presentation.
A presentation. Okay.
Yeah,
that's just recognizing
thank
that.
Thank you. And
will we be having a presentation from Morro Bay Beautiful next month?
That is coming
next
up.
Next meeting, I mean.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing we are concluded with future agenda items, we can adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.